is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted! Tre Day! Tre'Davious White! He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there! Poy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to One Bills Drive. It's a busy day at One Bills Drive, and it's not all football. Of course, the hockey game starts in 3 hours right across the parking lot. John Murphy here in our One Buffalo studio at One Bills Drive, joined by Chris Brown, Bills Insider at BuffaloBills.com, in place of Donald Jones, who finishes off his vacation today. Donald will be off, or will be back next Tuesday. Chris, thanks for doing this. We appreciate having you in here again.
Yeah, good to be here.
Bookend of the week. Bookend of the week for us, right? Tuesday and Friday.
Yeah. As far as Tuesday bookends go on a holiday weekend,
Right. Well, you can tell there's a buzz in the air, and there's hockey, obviously. The parking lot is kind of full of people who are just beginning to arrive. That's one thing. Over on this side of the complex, the campus, as they say, we've got a potentially playoff football game coming up here. I could tell just from the brief media portion of watching practice today that there was a buzz in the air. I think it's tangible, don't you?
Well, I kind of felt that on Wednesday just talking to a lot of the players. I think they clearly know what's on the line, and a lot of these guys haven't been in this position. So as much as there is energy because of what's at stake this weekend, I think there's also some nervous energy, too, mm-hmm. because of the newness of this, playing for something – with some genuine stakes on the line here in Week 17, which was a story that we wrote on BuffaloBills.com this week. What's it like to have meaningful football at the end of the season? Something that a lot of the guys in that locker room have not experienced. I was talking to Jordan Poyer, who obviously had been in Cleveland previously, hasn't experienced anything like this. And he said, yeah, there is a little bit of nervous energy. He goes, but I think there's more excitement than nerves at work here.
Sean McDermott was asked about it in his news conference today, about that nervous energy on all the young players here. And as you might expect, McDermott, Mr. Trust the Process, said, you got to trust the process. He said he detects that his team is focused, there might be a little bit more energy, but they are focused and going through the process of getting ready to play this week, whatever it takes. We've talked a lot on this show about Lorenzo Alexander's week-long regimen of getting himself physically ready to play. He's not the only one. Several players do. Most of them do, as a matter of fact. But I get that, too, that players, yes, they're nervous. They're excited about a big game coming up in Miami. But they also know that the reason they're here is that they've handled this on a week-to-week basis, on a process-based basis. And I think I think McDermott does a good job of hammering that home to this group. Like, hey, do what got you here. And what got you here was following your normal routine.
That's why if anything happens towards the positive this week, meaning they do qualify for the playoffs. I actually got a question from a fan on Twitter today. If they do advance to the playoffs, how is McDermott going to keep these guys from, flying off the handle and focusing in what could be a short week if they have to play a road wild card game on a Saturday? And I said, well, that's what he's been doing all season long.
Yeah.
He's been setting this approach up all year. So when you get to these giant games, which a playoff game obviously would be, it's just like every other week in terms of the preparation. He set up the approach and the way they do business every week in this fashion for this very reason. So when the big games come, the preparation and the approach and the operation through the course of the week runs just like it always does during the regular season. Nothing changes, nothing deviates.
McDermott's news conference got a couple of interesting questions today, including whether he planned on going across the parking lot and skating on the ice. Okay, he said he does not. But the other one that I found interesting, and not laughable, but just kind of funny. Somebody asked him, okay, if you make the playoffs this year, how do you get how do you prevent your team from letting down next year? And I'm thinking, wait a minute, let's get to point A before we get to point C. It's almost as if you're setting them up for, okay, so you're going to make the playoffs this year. How are you going to match that? What do you do for an encore? There's a lot that has to be done just to get to the playoffs.
Well, and he had a comment earlier in the week, and I think it's 100% correct. What happens this year does not carry over to next year in any way, shape, or form. Yes, you can celebrate the success of this year if they happen to qualify for the playoffs, and that would be a great achievement, especially in year one under a new head coach with all the new things that came to this team and this roster in the offseason. But as you and I have talked several times on this show, this is a week-to-week league. Now you want to take it year over year and expect things to carry over. There is very little carryover. Every week in this league is different for football teams. Every year is in very stark contrast to the one before. And I think that's why in this league you see so many teams, new teams, in the playoffs every year. You know, you got 12 teams that qualify. This year there are going to be 8 teams in the playoffs that were not in the playoffs last year. Why? Because every week is different in this league, and year over year rosters change, coaches change. You're going to have maybe 8 to 10 coaching changes this offseason. That kind of turnover changes too much in this league for anyone to say, well, you know, great season this year, it's tremendous momentum for next year.
Yeah.
It's really not.
It never is. You never start from where you left off.
Yeah.
You start from zero. And McDermott understands that. So let's not get ahead of ourselves. In fact, we wanted to. Our producer, Jay Harris, came up with the idea for a Twitter poll. He kind of wants to take the temperature of Bills fans, listeners at least to our show, and how optimistic you might be on the Bills' chances of everything working out and them winding up in the playoffs, snapping the 17-season playoff drought. So that's our Twitter poll today, and let's get to it. I want to engage Chris on this and, of course, you on the telephone lines at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550 or on Twitter. You can vote in the Twitter poll. Here we are Friday, 2 days before the regular season finale. You all know what has to happen for the Bills to make the postseason. So what's your level of optimism for the Buffalo Bills making the playoffs? How optimistic are you? You think it's going to happen? Pretty simple question. What is your level of optimism for the Bills to make the playoffs? We offer up a couple of choices here. Very optimistic, cautiously optimistic, not optimistic at all. And right now, early returns and the Twitter poll, 45% of you say you're not optimistic about the Bills making the playoffs. 44% of you say you are cautiously optimistic. 11% say you are very optimistic. I would put myself in the category of cautiously optimistic, Chris. I believe this Bills team can handle the Dolphins. Demonstrated that a couple of weeks ago. Not going to be easy. Dolphins are at home, but I think they can handle the Dolphins, take care of their own end of the bargain. And I think out of those other two scenarios, you know, the Ravens losing or both the Chargers and help me out.
Titans
losing. Thank you. that scenario. I think one of those two scenarios can happen. So I would be cautiously optimistic for the Bills to get this done. And we're sitting here on Monday with the Bills of the playoff berth. There's no guarantee. I read some, all kinds of analysis, all kinds of odds maker analysis who put the Bills' chances of winding up in the postseason at about 20%, 20 to 25%. But there's a chance, and I think this could happen. Your thoughts? Are you optimistic?
I'm cautiously optimistic also. I'm in the same boat there. And it's ironic that that number is somewhere in the mid-40s because right now the New York Times playoff machine has the Bills making it in 44% of their thousands, tens of thousands of simulations based on what they need to happen, which, as we all know, is either a Baltimore loss coupled with their win or a Titans and Chargers loss, as you mentioned. So, you know, it's a little bit less than 50-50 that it's going to happen, and I think that's why cautious optimism is probably a good place to be going into Sunday. And they are 2.5. They're slight favorites this weekend. The odds makers have them at 2.5, giving 2.5 points to the Dolphins. And I think that's probably right. The Dolphins typically play better football at home. I do believe, though, if this team gets up on them early, the Dolphins will 100% run for the bus. Got to get up like 10-0 in an ideal world, 14-0, a first half, like the first meeting against that team. That would be super because I think the tents would be folded pretty quick by Miami. They got zero to play for. There's been some internal strife there, so jump on them early and make it happen.
What is your level of optimism for the Bills to get this done, make the playoffs? Let us know what you think via Twitter or on the phone lines, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. And if you are optimistic or not optimistic, tell us why. Give us a reason. On Twitter, we've got a couple of tweets on this. St. Nick Feely tweets in, if you have been a Bills fan for any significant amount of time and you are optimistic at all, I want to meet you so you can brighten my day. I understand that, but let me just say this, and I believe this with every fiber of my being, Chris.
Mm.
In this case, the past is not a prologue. Anything that happened in the past during the 17 years out of the playoffs has nothing to do with this weekend. Nothing to do with it. The cast of characters has changed. There's no residue from past failures to make the playoffs. So if you have been a Bills fan for a long time and you are optimistic, go ahead and do that because what happened in the previous 17 years has absolutely nothing to do with what could happen or might happen this weekend. You agree or not?
Yeah. I mean, and I understand why there's some of that feeling out there because it's been going on for so long that the playoffs haven't been part of the equation for this franchise. So I understand why there's doubt, why there's pessimism. I get it. I know. And people don't – I think too many times people feel like they've set themselves up for disappointment by being optimistic.
Yeah.
I can totally respect all of that. But, man, just go in, hope for the best, and, you know, hopefully the team comes through for you and rewards you for your loyalty.
Yeah. I understand why you might feel that way, but it's not based in logic. It really isn't. There's no logical reason why what happened over the last 17 years has anything to do with this weekend. Eric Poole tweets in, mathematically, there's a chance. Realistically, 0%. Wrong. It's not 0%. It's, as we said, you know, somewhere, well, you said
44%, 44% of scenarios, according to the New York Times playoff machine.
And finally, Nick Blake with a tweet that says, how can anyone not be very optimistic about the chance of playing in the postseason? The Bills have finally turned the corner. That might be wrong, too, as a matter of fact. We'll see if they've turned the corner. Here's the thing, and I wanted to say this earlier on when you first joined us this hour. No matter what happens this weekend, in my mind, there have been significant steps forward this year. And, you know, if they don't get it done, if they finish 8-8, if they finish 9-7 and don't make it, we'll be bitterly disappointed, all of us. But you have to acknowledge that there's been significant change here. Obviously, coaching staff, football department, personnel people, the roster has been totally made over, and there's been a concerted effort to change the culture of the team, to bring the right type of players in, and that's progress from where they were. That is a step forward, again, regardless of whether they finish 8-8, 9-7, or whatever. And to be in the position they are in right now, on the cusp of a playoff spot with all of the change, all of the upheaval of the last 6 months or so, I think that is a pretty significant step forward. In fact, I think it's gravy. You know, it's the icing on the cake to have a chance to make the playoffs at this point. No one will be happy if they miss. People will be bitterly disappointed if they don't get in. There'll be reasons why. There'll be, you know, 6 or 8 months worth of second guessing about why they didn't get in. But I do believe you have to acknowledge that change is in effect right here. Is the culture changed? No, not yet. But there have been significant changes in the early stages of changing the culture here, and that is progress.
Let me flip it around on you, though.
Yes,
what
sir.
Happens if they do make the playoffs, exceed expectations? How does that change the conversation about in terms of support for Coach McDermott and what he's trying to institute here with his vision, his process, his approach? How does that change? Do you think that there's going to be a ton more
within
people
the building,
hopping
or?
On the – no, out in Bills fandom.
Okay.
You know, is it everybody's on board then after that? Is that the last step here in year one that has to happen to get everybody on board, everybody believing? I don't know. I mean, I think
you never get everybody, right?
You never get everybody, but I think it would dramatically change the outlook going forward.
Yeah, you're probably right.
We haven't thought about that yet because we're not there yet,
right.
But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, man, if they actually pull this off and get to the postseason, just the whole, I don't know, it just feels like there's still some clouds,
you know,
up there hanging out, waiting to rain on One Bills Drive to say, I told you so.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And
have you listened to our show? We got a lot.
Well, yes, I know. So that's why I'm kind of curious. If they do win, the right things happen, they reach the playoffs, which I don't think anybody anticipated. I'll be the first to admit, I didn't think playoffs are in the cards just because of what the history of first-year coaches in this league do. A very small percentage of them reach the postseason in year one. Adam Gase was an exception last year. There are a couple other examples through the course of the last 5 or 6 years. But by and large, first-year head coaches do not reach the playoffs for the very reason that they're usually undertaking rebuilding efforts. So if they do pull this off, I'm just very curious to see what the rhetoric is out there among Bills fans. Does it completely flip and go ultra positive? Or is there a sizable shift, a measurable shift? Or is it incremental and say, well, I'm going to wait to next year and see if they can keep going in that direction?
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, I'll see what it is. I'm not sure what to tell you. There will always be people who look on the dark side, and I've resigned myself to that. I hope that people appreciate that they've affected some pretty serious change here, both on the roster, in the football department, and the culture, and it's not changed yet. But if they also manage to squeeze themselves into the playoffs, yeah, to answer your question, I think people will take a look and say, huh, maybe there is something going out there.
Yeah, and the thing that strikes me the most, I remember talking to Lorenzo Alexander last season, around this time, and, you know, the season's put to bed. They were playing for nothing in the last week. It was a whole mess. Anthony Lynn, Tyrod not playing. Week 17 was just a mess last year. And I remember talking to Lorenzo Alexander in the locker room, and that was probably a week or so removed from people like LeSean McCoy, Lorenzo Alexander, talking about how the players have to hold each other more accountable for what's going on out on the field. I think the coaches needed to hold each other a little more accountable, too,
sure,
from the previous staff. But what he explained to me was every roster in the NFL is going to have players who live, you know, in the gray. They're not the guys on this side that do everything to the letter, no matter what coaches ask, I'm going to do it, and then I'm going to go an extra mile. And then you have guys that are so talented that they may not have to go to that length, but they do enough to be on your roster. And then there's some guys in the gray who have talent but don't really want to be a pro's pro, and they're just hanging on because they offer some ability but don't do everything the right way. And when he said that to me, I kind of went back to my office and I said, well, let me go down the roster. How many guys do we have in gray here? And I came up with about 8 to 10 guys, yeah, on a 53-man roster. I mean, you know, that's 20% of your roster. And if you look at this roster now, you'd be hard-pressed to really say this is a guy who lives in the gray that Lorenzo Alexander talks about. And I think that is a credit to the front office and to the coaching staff for weeding those guys out of the equation. And Coach McDermott said it, I think, perfectly on Wednesday. He said, I would rather coach a team that is shorter on talent but plays better together as a team. And I think that is the quintessential sentence for what he has done in this first season. How could you trade Sammy Watkins? How could you trade Ronald Darby? How, you know, these are top picks,
yep,
talented guys, this, that, and the other. Well, Sammy Watkins admitted in an article by Tyler Dunn about a week or so ago, he was a me guy when he was here. Now you know why he's not here. So, yeah, super talented, could probably help your team on the field, but not the right people for where this, he wants to take this team. And now what you have is a roster, you know, for lack of a better term, of good soldiers. Guys, you're not wondering what you're going to get from them on a Sunday. You know you're going to get their level best every single week. And coaches, there's a peace of mind there when you have a roster top to bottom that's constructed like that. Is it going to be all 53? Maybe not, but you've got probably 51 here right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that makes a difference.
This Sunday, Sean McDermott's going to get a chance to coach his team against a team with more talent. He's going to get his wish this Sunday.
Yeah, but look at what's happening down there right now.
Yeah.
You got players yelling at coaches.
Yeah.
You got players yelling at players. And you got an assistant coach who got fired. You had a veteran linebacker who came from the Pittsburgh organization who went AWOL on you at the beginning of the year. I mean, it is a colossal mess down there. But you talk to the guys in the Buffalo locker room, they're like, really, really talented team. When they put that all together, they can beat a team like New England, like we saw a few weeks ago. But by and large, when you don't have the character makeup necessary to go through the grind of a 17-week season, hang together as a group, as Coach talks about all the time, you're going to end up where the Dolphins end up, which is on the outside looking in.
We're talking about this week's game. We're talking about the season. And really, we're talking about your level of optimism for this working out for the Bills, for making the playoffs. That's our Twitter poll. Are you very optimistic the Bills are going to wind up next Monday with a playoff spot? Are you cautiously optimistic like I am that that will happen? Or do you say there's no optimism at all? You're pessimistic that they will wind up with a playoff spot. It's our Twitter poll. You can call us up and let us know what you think at 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. On the show today, Chris is with us all day, and for Donald Jones, who finishes up his vacation today. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, will join us in studio. 1 o'clock, this is going to be weird because the Bills aren't playing the Ravens, but we're all interested in the Ravens game, and Kadri Ismail, former Ravens wide receiver and part of the broadcast team for the Baltimore Ravens, will join us at 1 o'clock today. Greg Cosell at 1:30. His look at the matchup, the Bills and the Dolphins, and some of the other key matchups. Greg Cosell from NFL Films and ESPN NFL Matchup, and the lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander coming up at 2 o'clock today. That's the rundown for today's show. You're welcome to join us, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let's work on a couple of calls here. Tim calling from Fairport, Newport, New York. Hello, Tim. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Mr. Murphy. Such a pleasure to get on your show first time, and just want to really appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
Just wanted to basically explain, honestly, I'm from Long Island. My gut team is the Giants. Obviously, I've had nothing to look forward to this year, but I've been following the Bills for the 7 years I've been living up here. I really feel that the Bills have such a golden opportunity to break the drought. Now, if one of the two scenarios happens, excellent. First case, Bills have to beat Miami. But give the fans what they've been waiting for so long. Give them a playoff shot. Will they win their first playoff game? Who knows? Any given Saturday, any given Sunday. But at least give the Bills fans that drought ending. The last point I want to make real quick as a Giants fan is the Giants obviously lost a lot of class this season with what they did to Eli Manning, and I personally feel that the Bills should go approach him for next season. Want to hear your thoughts on that. Have a great day, guys.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah, I agree with you too, Chris, and there is, I think, you know, and this is not why it's imperative that they make the playoffs. It's imperative you make the playoffs because that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to compete for the championship. But if they can put that 17-season playoff drought behind them in, by Sunday, I think it would go a long way towards it. You talked about the dark clouds. That would lift a great big dark cloud off this franchise.
I think it's a yoke, maybe even more on the necks of Bills fans than it is on the players in this locker room.
Exactly, absolutely.
Because the fans have lived through all 17 years of that. By and large, there isn't a player in that locker room who's been here 17 years and experienced all of that. Kyle Williams has experienced the longest in that locker room, longer than any coach, too. But the yoke is around the necks of the fans. And just, you know, going into a bar and telling somebody you're a Bills fan, the first thing they're going to hear is, yeah, let me know when you're in the playoffs. Just having to endure that, I think, is what eats at Bills fans, too. And, you know, you get there, you know, the monkey's off the back and you're good to go. So, too many cliches there. But, you know, I just think that's the reward for the loyalty that Bills fans have shown. Yeah. Finally, that thing is wiped off the slate and you can move forward.
His point, Tim's point about Eli Manning.
Yeah.
First of all, and we will talk about this later too, Dave Gettleman to the Giants, I think, is
as GM.
A remarkable move and a good hire for them. And I'm happy for Dave Gettleman, who started here in the NFL in 1986 and is a good guy. He's been on the show several times. But I don't know what, you know, I'm not getting to the next quarterback, but I don't know that a veteran like an Eli Manning or fill in the blank of any other veteran, I don't know that that's the right fit for this team moving forward.
Well, he's at the end.
Yeah.
And that's the one issue that I would have with a move like that. I suppose if you have plans to draft a quarterback who you don't believe is going to be NFL ready at the drop, you know, week one, maybe you bring Eli Manning in to be your bridge quarterback. And, you know, you want to talk about a guy who knows how to do it the right way. You really can't do much better than someone with the last name of Manning. That being said, I think what you're getting at is if you're going to fill that position with a different veteran other than Tyrod Taylor, you need somebody who's got years in front of them, somebody who's on the cusp of entering their prime and has eight more good seasons left in them, because this is a long-range plan. This isn't a get-rich-quick type of scheme that Sean McDermott's trying to run. He's trying to build an institution here. So I don't know that Eli Manning fits the model of what they're looking for unless, as I said, they envision drafting a quarterback high in the draft, but one that may not necessarily be ready to put on the field immediately because of certain things that they feel they may need to correct in that player's individual game or in that player's processing of the NFL game. So what's the perfect example? The perfect example, if you're going to go that route, is a Kirk Cousins. If you can pry him away from Washington, this is a guy that is just entering the prime of his career and probably has eight good seasons left in him. You want to build around that guy, now I'm on board.
Yeah.
But a 36-year-old Eli Manning, that's a tough row to hoe.
Here's a call from Mike in North Tonawanda. Go ahead, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Okay, guys. With tongue in cheek, I first got to ask you, what does logic have to do with being a Bills fan?
That's a very good point.
All right.
Yeah, you're right.
Touche.
I've suffered since 68, the OJ ball. Of course, love the results of that. Don't like what happened to OJ later in life, what he did. But when I was a kid, he was my hero. When I met him, the first time I met him, I couldn't even speak. He talked to me. Now, I'm going to say I'm cautiously not optimistic. I think some of the losses earlier in the season are the key to this, the three-game losing streak, the loss to Cincinnati, some of the other losses. But I want to give a great shout-out to Coach McDermott. This guy has done a remarkable job. And I can, as much as I admire Belichick's worth or his work ethic, I don't like him as a person or as an opponent, but I couldn't think of another coach that could have done as good a job. And I want to say that he had nerves of steel, and he did the right thing when he benched Tyrod. Tyrod's been here for 3 years. He's a great teammate. He knows the pocket and how to escape as well as anybody. He has no instincts as a passer. He can't lead guys open. He can't anticipate guys getting open. It's been 3 years. And Coach recognized that's why it's time to move on. But I want to give a big shout-out and just applaud him for his nerves. People saying that he should be fired around the country and stuff like that.
Who's saying that? I didn't read that. Who's saying he should be fired? McDermott?
Oh, you didn't. It was on First Take.
Back around the Peterman time. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah, back around the Peterman time.
Gotcha.
That's how absurd some people can be. But listen, I'm going to let you go. Hey, Chris.
Thanks.
Admire, and respect all the work you do for us. I loved your excitement when Murph was asking you about Anquan Boldin.
We're going back to training camp.
Wow. I can go back to 1970, so don't let that amaze you. But last thing, and I want to get off the air for you. Chris was saying, hell no, put him in the game and run him. Let's use him.
Yeah.
You know, and his excitement was so refreshing. Okay. Yeah. Guys, keep up the good work. Hey, Murph, I'll let you go. I'll talk to you another day. Thank you.
Okay. Now I'm worried.
He had a long list there. That was fun. Appreciate the call,
though.
And the kind words. That's nice. Yeah, that was fun.
Why didn't you convey that sort of enthusiasm to Anquan Boldin himself?
Well, I think he was listening to the show, and he got terrified at the thought of playing 70 plays a game, and he said, I'm going to retire. So maybe it's my fault that he actually up and left like 2 weeks later.
That was a fun day. You were all fired up.
That was a downer 2 weeks later, I tell you.
Tom in West Seneca, welcome to the show. Tom, you're on the air with us.
Hi, John. Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me. About the Twitter poll, I am extremely optimistic.
All right.
Matter of fact, I'm so optimistic, I think that when we make the playoffs, we're going to go all the way to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl, and we will be the Cinderella team. And also, I have to comment on the naysayers and doubters all year long. They're going to want to jump on the bandwagon. That's okay. But I have, like, everybody's been talking about Coach McDermott. I have full faith in him, and I think we're going all the way. There'll be a very happy New Year. Thanks, guys.
Right.
Happy New Year.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Let's go.
So Tom in West Seneca just confirmed what Mike in North Tonawanda said previously, that there is no logic to being a Bills fan.
Yeah, good point. James in East Aurora. Hello, James. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Hi, Chris. I just wanted to say I am cautiously optimistic. I actually am more fearful of the Bills beating the Dolphins than I am of the Baltimore game. I think Cincinnati is going to win that game. Mm-hmm. I think Giovanni Bernard showed last week he has something to prove. And if Jay Cutler comes out like he did on Monday night a couple weeks ago against New England, the Bills better look out. I'm cautiously optimistic. I think it's going to go our way, but I think the biggest fear we should have is winning our game.
Well, yeah, and it's not guaranteed. There's no question. I don't fear it, but I watched the first half of Bills-Dolphins last night. I'll probably watch the second half tonight, Chris. You know, that became a game down the stretch, and, of course, a muffed onside kick handle by the Bills didn't help. But
right.
I do think the Bills had that game in hand. It wasn't totally in control. But once they moved down the field three times in the first half, long drives, cashed in with touchdowns, I felt that day that they had it in control. But, look, there are weapons over there. You know, Cutler has a big-time arm, the likes of which you don't see in the NFL very often. profit. Good targets if they're ready to play, you know, right. on the outside terminals. They are without Julius Thomas now, the tight end who played against the Bills a couple weeks ago. Kenyon Drake is capable of going off. There are weapons on that offense, and there's a pretty stout defensive front there. So it's not going to be a walkover. I don't anticipate that at all.
Yeah, what gives me the most concern is the fact that this is a game that's on the road. Dolphins typically play better football at home, number one. And number two, the Bills have two wins on the road this season. Two. It's been tough for them to get victories. Their offense seems to struggle a little bit more on the road than at home. And the defense on the whole, you know, you don't know every week, particularly in road games, what you're going to get. I think that the defense hangs in for a while, kind of similar to what we saw in New England last week. You know, they're there. They're playing good football for a half, even, you know, through the latter stages of the third quarter. And then come the fourth quarter, you know, there's some leaks, some cracks, and they're giving up some big plays, and the game gets away from them. And that has happened more on the road than at home, maybe the Saints game being the exception. That's what concerns me, mm-hmm. just the lack of consistency in road games this year, and then knowing on top of that that the Dolphins typically play better football in their home stadium.
Practice is just wrapped up on the other side of this building, the AdPro Sports Training Center, a 90-minute practice for the Bills. Deontay Thompson will be a true game-time decision, according to Sean McDermott today. He left practice early yesterday with a shoulder injury. If he can't go, there's a chance, I would think, that Brandon Riley would be up and in the lineup. Wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin should be good to go. Cornerback Sharice Wright, still in concussion protocol, did not practice yesterday, what they weren't sure about today. Miami, they've got some injury issues as well to keep an eye on moving forward, including left tackle Laremy Tunsil, who has not practiced yet this week with an ankle injury. That bears watching as we move forward. Bills just wrapping up practice. We'll talk about the Bills and the Dolphins throughout the afternoon. We're going to talk with Mark Kelso about it in a moment, the color analyst on the Bills radio network. It's a big football day here in One Bills Drive with the game coming up, the regular season finale on Sunday against the Miami Dolphins in Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. Also, right around the corner, right across the parking lot, it's a big hockey day. As the World Juniors game, Canada and U.S. will face off in about 2.5 hours. So come on back. We've got a lot of ground to cover today. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back. Happy New Year, everybody. Too soon? Too early to say that, Chris? Too soon to say Happy New Year? I don't think so.
No, people do that right after Christmas.
Happy New Year, everybody. Chris Brown is with us in studio in place of Donald Jones, who comes back on Tuesday, our next show after today. We're live in our One Buffalo studio, and joining us in studio, ready for the next several minutes of insight and analysis, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, longtime Bills safety, Mark Kelso. Happy New Year, Mark Kelso.
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah. I mean, and great. I mean, it's just great to have a little bit of time off for the holidays. I know these guys don't have a whole lot, and they're back at it, and you didn't either. Yeah, I feel badly for you.
Yeah, you did. So. Sure you did. Did you have any trouble getting in the lot today with the
– Yeah, you know what? I underestimated that a little bit.
I just thought of that, yeah.
I underestimated. They said, no, you need a ticket. You need a a parking pass. I said, I need to go to the John Murphy Show. And they said, the John Murphy Show? Okay, boom, right in. Green light.
Now, everybody coming to the hockey game now is going to do that. He's going to say, John Murphy Show.
Well, he took my name down, and I said, yeah, and Mark Kelso, I'm going to the John Murphy Show. And he goes, okay, the John Murphy Show. Did you say Mark Kelso? And I said, yes, sir. And he goes, you're not the Mark Kelso. And I said, no, I'm not. I said, I don't know what that means. But he was really nice. He goes, yeah. I got a card. Can you sign my card? I said, yes,
are you the real Mark Kelso?
You get a lot? Are there a lot of Kelso imposters out there?
I bet. I don't get that very often, quite frankly. So,
Mark Kelso in studio with us to talk about this matchup, the Bills and the Dolphins. And I think it's important soon, if not now, Mark, to put aside the implications of the game, what has to happen, the import of the game. Everybody's aware of that. And I'm sure that Sean McDermott has his team focused on this game, this matchup, the rematch from just 2 weeks ago. All these other things don't amount to much, right?
Yeah, it don't amount to anything, quite frankly. You got to take care of your own business and hope that you get some help on the other side of that. And this is a team that's got some significant weapons and some really good defensive personnel, no question. But not when I look at it, and I try to study it just as if it was a game that hadn't happened a few weeks ago as well. I mean, you didn't play this team in recent weeks, and I'm seeing a team that's not playing nearly at the level they did when they beat New England, and when they came in here with all that promise, and the Bills sent them home with a loss, and And they certainly have a lot of weapons. They have some good personnel on the defensive side of the football, but they've changed some things as well. And that's why sometimes when you study, you don't like to go back and you need to understand what they did the previous time, but you don't like to go back to it because, I mean, they're not playing as much man as they played last time. I mean, they're playing a little bit more zone. They're playing some cover three zone. They are playing some man, no question about it. But there's some ways you can beat this team. And Kansas City had a really, really good game plan, moving guys all around. And, of course, they paid particular attention to Kelce.
Right.
And he created some matchup problems for them and ended up scoring a touchdown. And then they got their running game going as well.
The matchup that intrigues me in this one is one we did not see in the first matchup, and that's Kelvin Benjamin and Tankersley. Both players missed the last game due to injury. They're both back for this game, at least it looks that way. I know Coach said today that it looks good for Benjamin, as it has the past couple of weeks, him kind of persevering through the meniscus injury. And it looks like Tankersley is going to be on the field. So what do you make of that matchup, number one, and what do you think is going to be their game plan for Benjamin in light of what we saw Benjamin do against New England and, you know, in previous games when he's been maybe a little more bottled up?
Yeah, and I'm just going to say before I even answer that question, this will give you some opportunities in the run game as well, because now they're going to have to – they won't be able to dedicate as many guys to the box, and they like to dedicate an extra safety to the box. They like to spin their safeties depending on what happens up inside so that they make sure they're at least man-for-man up inside. And if they're man-for-man, quite frankly, the way they play their linebackers, I think the Bills with some misdirection runs and will have some opportunities in the running game. But Benjamin creates a very difficult matchup situation, there's no question about it, with a bigger body, able to catch the ball outside his body frame. And
Tankersley is 6'1", though. He's not a runt. You know, by any means.
Yeah,
but he's not that long. Nobody's that long.
No, and it's just, I mean, the length that Benjamin has gives him that opportunity, I think. So, obviously, he becomes a formidable component in the red area. And defensively, I want to say, in the red area, they haven't been great, have they? Given up 64% touchdowns, so 30th in the league in the red area. So he becomes a formidable component there. And they're going to have to dedicate some personnel over the top. Both safeties, I mean, at one point I thought Rashad Jones, and I think he was, there's no question about it, he was their best defensive player. And he's playing at a pretty high level, but not quite as high.
He struggled with Kelce the other day.
Well, he did, and there were some times when
– A lot of people do.
Well, and there were some times when they were leaning him a little bit to Kelce, and that may be some of the strategy they try to employ against Benjamin, but – There were times when he looked like he was reading the offensive line, but he got some misreads or he didn't read it correctly, or he was jumping up and trying to get involved in a run, because there were a number of times that they were playing cover two when he just voided that half of the field and they had some opportunities down the field. And when they spin those safeties and they put McDonald, TJ back there, he's a good player, a really good player, but much more of a box player than he is a free safety.
And he's nicked up too.
Yeah, and he doesn't have a lot of fluidity at the free safety position, and he's not going to have a lot of range. I mean, he's a guy that's going to come down. He's a downhill guy. He wants to come downhill, and he's going to hit you hard. But even in a man situation, sometimes they had him in a man situation, which created a real mismatch if they were in a trips formation per se. And a couple times had guys deep down the field, a couple times completed it, and a couple times missed some of those opportunities. But I think there'll be some opportunities against this team without question in both the running and the passing game.
I've always been a Kiko fan going back to his time here, but he's either out of position, I mean, and miscast in where they're putting him, or he's just lost something, because he seems to be victimized a lot by tight ends and backs coming out of the backfield.
Yeah, and sometimes it's a result of not taking the air out, because you talk about taking the air out of a back coming out of the backfield. When that back releases from the backfield, and typically Kiko has that coverage, sometimes he's been lined up on an extra tight end if it's 12 personnel with the two tight ends and two receivers, but you when you give that running back a lot of air, I mean, there's a lot of quickness there, and I know Kiko has quickness as well and can cover guys typically coming out of the backfield, but that's a really difficult task because it's a short space. It's usually a short to intermediate throw and doesn't take a lot of separation for that quarterback to be able to fit it in. But here's what they do with their linebackers. So Timmons, who, again, has had a terrific career, but slowing down, there's no question about that. So they line him up at about 3.5 yards from the line of scrimmage. So he's the attack guy. Kiko lines up at 5.5 to 6.5 sometimes, and he's going to try to run over the top. Where he gets himself in trouble, because he's not a real stout guy, is when he tries to run underneath the block. And he runs underneath the block, and then all that offensive lineman needs to do is get a hand on him and hold him up. It negates his speed and acceleration to make a play on the football, and then there's some opportunities on the outside, and It was Hunt. I mean, Hunt took advantage of it a number of times with Kansas City. They ran the option. I mean, they were very creative, Kansas City was, with their play calling and and running the option and running the jet sweep and running some bubble screen and then trying to stretch this team down the field and had a lot of success. So I think when you start Kiko going one way and you start to his side with LeSean McCoy and you come back the other way, Timmons is going to get caught up in everything. And you're going to, you can block down and you can pull that backside guard and you can run that power play, and there's going to be plenty of room, I think, up inside, just outside those defensive tackles. Tough to run in with those two guys, or three guys, but I think there'll be some room on the edge just inside those defensive ends.
What about misdirection, though? Because the Chiefs use misdirection pretty effectively against them.
Well, that's I'm saying.
I mean, because if you – I mean, but in the run game – but it seemed like they were using the misdirection and then countering with Tyreek Hill off of that sometimes. Like, you know, before – you know, faking the handoff and then finding Tyreek Hill somewhere. And then they even use Hill in the backfield, too, through the course of the year.
Yeah, used him in the backfield and motioning guys back in. And like I said, they ran that option that time. Then they run jet sweep. And then they're running that little flip pass in front.
Yeah.
So they had all kinds of opportunities, particularly if you're playing man. But what that does – so again, so if they're playing nickel personnel, if the Bills are in 11 personnel, so with that one back, one tight end, and three wide receivers, and they're playing nickel personnel, so now they've got six guys in the box and maybe the seventh guy, depending on where that nickel defender or one of the additional safeties or one of the two safeties is playing in that situation. So now you could have an advantage of the running back. But again, Timmons is going to line up closer to the line of scrimmage, and he's going to attack on that first step. So if he attacks and he's on the backside, now LeSean McCoy starts one way towards the side Kiko's on, who's about 6.5, so he's coming. That's his first step read, is to mirror LeSean McCoy. Now he comes back the other side. Timmons has already tried to close that gap on that backside gap between the guard and the center, that A gap, and now he gets caught up as well, and then you pull that backside guard, and he comes up and can provide that lead block. You can move Charles Clay back inside, or Nick O'Leary, someone to provide that block. I mean, you can use DeMarco as well. And then there's opportunities. I think there's real opportunities in the toss game, quite frankly, to get the edge when you have a cluster of receivers there, a couple tight ends and a receiver, and particularly when they're trying to play man defense, because they try to back off when you're in a cluster situation and try to read those guys filtering through if they're crossing at the line of scrimmage. So, I mean, there's good opportunities there. I think there's some really good opportunities, again, in the passing game, too. There will be no shortage of opportunities to attack this Dolphin defensive unit.
What about the Buffalo defensive unit? When you look at what Deion Lewis was able to do last week, and you remember Kenyon Drake had over, 113 yards from scrimmage against the Bills 2 weeks ago, he's a dangerous guy and a much bigger back than Deion Lewis last week.
Yeah, and pretty lean. I mean, he's a stout guy, but he's not real compact. But he turned a couple negative runs into 17, 20-yard runs. I mean, he's got fantastic acceleration, understands what he needs to do. I mean, they'll run – I mean, Pouncey becomes a very athletic center. Very few guys in this league. Eric Wood can do it, and not in a heavy dose, but in some doses he'll pull from that center position depending on where those defensive tackles are. But Pouncey does it all the time. They'll run a lead play with a wing back coming across, whether it's whether using A.J. Derby or whoever's playing tight end in that situation. So they use that situation. They'll run the inside zone. Occasionally, they'll run a toss. I mean, they'll do some things creatively, and Drake is very good. And if he's going to run that inside zone and he sees a sliver, boy, he's going to accelerate through the next level, and it's going to be hard to bring him down. And then in the passing game, Jarvis Landry still continues to be a really formidable target, no question. But they've changed. They're not running nearly as much middle flood and middle crossing. They'll clear one guy out on one side and bring two guys from the backside on those double in cuts and try to find one of those guys. Or they'll run, we talked about that bubble screen. You know how they run the bubble screen where Jarvis Landry will step back. Now they're not doing that, and they're taking – if they're in a trip situation, they're taking the two outside receivers and running them down the field, and then they'll get to about 15 and block, and Landry comes in behind him, and it effectively it's a screen, and he catches the ball at
screen.
he catches the ball at 3 or 4 yards. But I'm going to tell you what, there were so many times, and it's splitting hairs sometimes, I guess, but with all the things that are going, we're talking about officiating, there are a number of times that those offensive linemen are downfield blocking
on
linebackers, and they're throwing that ball across the line of scrimmage. Now, they're allowed to block downfield the linemen are, that is, if, in fact, the ball's caught behind the line of scrimmage. But a lot of times it's not caught behind, and yeah, I think Bills need to be aware of that situation.
The one thing that has, you know, with the Dolphins that bears watching is their tackle situation. They're already without their starting right tackle. Sam Young's been over there for the last couple of weeks, had to play against the Bills a couple of weeks ago because they didn't have their right tackle. Their left tackle now, Laremy Tunsil, has missed the last 2 days of practice. I didn't see what's going on today just yet. Haven't seen any reports out of there as to whether he's practicing today. But they could potentially be without both of their starting tackles. I mean, that's good news for Buffalo's pass rush, which was able to get pressure on Cutler to a certain extent in the first meeting.
Yeah, and they need to find some ways to get pressure. There's no question about that. But again, he's gonna throw the ball short and intermediate. I mean, they don't have a real vertical pass game. Although Jakeem Grant has been outstanding.
He's getting better.
He'll run that bubble screen.
He's like a mini Tyreek Hill almost.
And he's got some real explosive acceleration. He just fires off that line of scrimmage, and if he catches that ball and he has a couple blockers, it's going to be a while in a run after the catch before you can bring him down.
He has become
a really good weapon for that Dolphin offense. And again, just get the ball in his hands, and he'll make something good happen.
Mark, we got to let you go, but I do want to get your response to our Twitter poll, just an overall sense of where the Bills are at. On Twitter, we're asking folks about their overall level of optimism. What is your level of optimism for the Bills to make the playoffs? Very optimistic, cautiously optimistic, not optimistic at all. Where would you be on that scale, Mark Kelso?
Well, I mean, they need to take care of their own business. So I would be optimistic. I mean, I think Cincinnati's got a lot of incentive. Obviously, they're talking about, or I think they've actually indicated that the coaching change is going to occur in the offseason. And I know Coach Lewis and the players in Cincinnati respect him a great deal, and maybe they feel like a good performance might change somebody's mind. But those guys want to play. I mean, they've got some real pride. They've been in the postseason a number of times.
They don't like Baltimore.
Yeah, they've got some pride, and Baltimore's, you know, they've had a few issues at home. Their defense is pretty formidable, but I think they'd have an opportunity. I think that's probably the best situation, the best scenario, because on the other side, then you need both teams to lose in order for the Bills to sneak in. But again, I mean, I think if you're preaching that message in the locker room, Coach McDermott saying what he has said all year, it's a process. Let's take care of the situation that we have control over. And the only thing we have control over is go out there and play really well in Miami, a game that in my mind got a little chippy up here in New Era Field. And so you got to play within your emotions, but use your emotions to your advantage and go out there and put together a really good effort. I mean, even if they don't make the postseason and they put together a really good effort on Sunday, I think there's some real, just real demonstrative progress forward that's been made with the construction of this club, and the future looks really bright if they put together a really good effort on Sunday.
All right, Mark, thanks for this. We'll see you tomorrow and work with you Sunday. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, look forward to it. Get out of this cold weather a little bit. Although if I have my choice between Miami and Buffalo, I'm taking Buffalo every time.
You always got to play to the fans, don't you? Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network. Well, he'll be part of the broadcast with us 4:25 p.m. on Sunday. The Bills and the Dolphins from Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. Chris Brown co-hosting today. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Thanks again to Mark Kelso for joining us in studio with his incisive analysis of Sunday's matchup, the Bills and the Dolphins. We'll continue our discussion with you about your level of optimism that the Bills wind up clinching a playoff berth this weekend. This from New York just came in. Jets coach Todd Bowles and GM Mike Maccagnan are both going to get the chance to continue what they've started. The team announcing they've extended the contract of both Bowles and Maccagnan. They're about to wrap up their third seasons with the team. Todd Bowles, 20 wins, 27 losses in three seasons. Bowles scheduled to speak with reporters after their practice. You would have had better than even money that Todd Bowles was out before this season began, right?
Right, but I think, as we were just talking about before we came back on air, I think he overachieved this season.
Sure.
When you think about the hand that Todd Bowles was dealt this year, I mean, to think that team – people thought they were going to have the first pick in the draft before the season started. They thought this team was going to be worse than the Browns. And he kept that team competitive. I think they had a couple of solid draft choices that they added. you know, but this is a team that got rid of Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, a lot of their veteran players that they had spent big free agency money on. They also shipped Sheldon Richardson out, who was a problem for that roster, to Seattle in another trade, picked up some draft capital. So, you know, the Jets kind of tried to improve their situation in the locker room too, which had been an issue the past few years. So Todd Bowles doing some similar things to that of Sean McDermott in terms of trying to improve the overall character of the team so he could get hardworking guys that play better together. And I think one of their big building blocks, ironically, not unlike the Bills, is going to be at that safety position with Jamal Adams and the other kid, Marcus May.
We'll have more time to talk about this in the next hour or two. We got 2 hours left to go on the show. We're going to talk with Qadre Ismail, radio color man on the Ravens broadcast network. We'll talk with him about Baltimore's critically important game against the Cincinnati Bengals. Coming up at 1:30, Greg Cosell from ESPN's NFL matchup. And we will revisit our discussion with you about the Buffalo Bills, and how optimistic are you that the Bills wind up in the playoffs at the end of this weekend? All of that coming up as the show rolls on. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. From One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports.
The update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills just wrapped up practice in the last 45 minutes or so inside the AdPro Sports Training Center. Wide receiver Deontay Thompson is going to be a game-time decision on Sunday. He left practice early yesterday with a shoulder injury. If he cannot go, there'd be a chance that Brandon Riley would be called up to the active roster. Wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin should be ready to go, according to head coach Sean McDermott. Left tackle Deion Dawkins was excused from practice today for personal reasons. He is expected to play on Sunday. Sharice Wright, Bills corner, still in concussion protocol, did not practice today. Miami Dolphins have issues as well with a couple of players, including left tackle Laremy Tunsil, not able to participate yet in practice. And if Tunsil cannot start at left tackle, the Dolphins may have to go with Zach Stirrup from Nebraska, claimed off Cleveland's practice squad earlier this year. The Dolphins started the season 4-2. They've lost 7 of their last 9. Kickoff 4:25 p.m. at Miami's Hard Rock Stadium. The Bills and the Dolphins. The Jets extended head coach Todd Bowles and GM Mike Maccagnan today. The team made that announcement. They said that they both worked together to build a foundation on which to grow. Both Bowles and Maccagnan about to wrap up their third season with the teams. The Giants named former Panthers GM Dave Gettleman as their general manager yesterday. Gettleman met with the media today and recommitted New York to having Eli Manning around as quarterback. Gettleman is 66 years old, spent 4 seasons as Carolina's GM after 15 years with the Giants. He began his career in pro football in 1986 right here with the Buffalo Bills. Hockey, USA versus Canada. New Era Field, the site for the World Juniors outdoor game, 3 p.m. faceoff. Last night, Casey Mittelstadt and Team USA lost 3-2 to Slovakia with a highlight goal from Casey Mittelstadt in that game. For the Sabres, game day in New Jersey, they play the Devils tonight. Their third of 7 straight games away from home. The puck is set to drop at 7 o'clock. College basketball locally, Canisius home at 4:30 against Ryder. Niagara home tonight at 7 o'clock against Iona College. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Chris Brown in our One Buffalo studio as they get set up for hockey outside at 3 o'clock this afternoon. The big game going on for the Bills, of course, Sunday, 4:25 p.m., the Bills and the Miami Dolphins. Another big game for the Buffalo Bills coming up on Sunday at M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. It's the Cincinnati Bengals and the Baltimore Ravens. And joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a man will be part of the Baltimore Ravens broadcast team, former NFL wide receiver with Baltimore, the Colts, the Dolphins, Green Bay, Minnesota. He won the Super Bowl with the Baltimore Ravens. Happy to have Qadre Ismail on the line with us. Qadre, it's John Murphy and Chris Brown. Thank you very much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Hey, so the Ravens have the easiest path to get this wild card playoff spot clinched, and they must look at it that way, right? We've got the fast lane anyway, trying to get to the playoffs compared to the other teams involved.
Yeah, you know, I think the one thing that any coach, any player would tell you when it comes to, you know, the final game of the year, you want to be in it and have it be a meaningful game, and then obviously, for the Ravens, it's winning, you're in, and I think that's something that, you know, the only way you get yourself in that position is by stacking multiple wins together. I think the Ravens, over the latter part of the season, has done that.
How do you account for the Ravens' surge in recent weeks? Did you see that coming, Kyle?
I think the health of Joe Flacco has really been evident, and then I think the Alex Collins factor has come to bat. And Alex Collins has been really the missing explosive piece that the offense so desperately needed. You couple that with the fact that Joe Flacco missed the majority of the preseason, for the most part went into the regular season without much work and was still dealing with his back, and you just saw the way it affected their play. You look at the way Alex Collins has been able to gel with his offensive line, who, you know, they kind of went through their carousel of changes, but for the most part, the ability to have Alex Collins out there being that explosive running back and then Joe Flacco being healthy, I think that really has been the big change for this offense and this Ravens ball club.
Obviously, these are two teams that know each other, Baltimore and Cincinnati, but, I mean, they haven't played since week one, and as we know, teams morph and change over the course of the year. So what are the Ravens saying this week in terms of what they're anticipating from a Cincinnati team who looks as though they have a lame duck coach in Marvin Lewis?
So I think that's the biggest elephant in the room, the fact that they have a lame duck coach. Traditionally, for the last 4 or 5 years, it's the Ravens going down to Cincinnati. The schedule makers had put it together where, you know, you're traveling the last game of the year, Cincinnati. Woo, great. Well, this year they come home, and, you know, I think that this is going to be something that, you know, the Ravens as a organization really is looking forward to. You know, it's unfortunate that, you know, clearly Marvin is – you know, moving on. I think that, you know, he was a really good coach. Unfortunately, just wasn't able to get it done postseason-wise. But overall, I think what we've seen from the Ravens is the ability to realize that offensively, defensively, and special teams, if two of those three units can make plays, that they have a great chance of winning the ball game. And I think, you know, looking at the Cincinnati Bengals, for whatever the reason, they just haven't been that consistent team that you would think, with all the talent on the roster and the names on the back of the jersey, it just hasn't been able to materialize for them. So could be a potential trap game, but I think that the Ravens recognize that they're a division opponent and you shouldn't take them lightly.
We're on the line with Kadri Ismail, Ravens radio analyst, talking about Baltimore's home game, 425, against the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals, that opener, one of, I believe, three teams that Baltimore has shut out this season, Kadri. And the game that sticks with me was back in late October. It was just a blowout. Thursday night, I believe it was, the Ravens over the Miami Dolphins. That game was the game that opened my eyes to just how good the Ravens defense still could be. And as you pointed out, the offense has come along in the last 5 or 6 weeks, too.
Yeah, I think the defense, they're a defense that, you know, if you have a poor matchup, I think Dean Pease, the defensive coordinator, he does a phenomenal job of exploiting the matchup. I think with the Miami Dolphins, that was at the time when Jay Ajayi was still a part of the Dolphins, where he was traded to the Philadelphia Eagles. But they just did a really good job of playing disciplined, upfront football. Prior to that game, they were giving up some really huge numbers as far as rushing attacks against that defense. And a lot of it had to do with Brandon Williams not being in the lineup. A lot of it had to do with just different guys with untimely injuries. But be that as it may, I think the Dolphin game, you're right, you know, it was a turnaround that they needed to really, as far as running against them and stopping the run, that they really, you know, drew the line in the sand and said enough is enough. And then conversely, you know, they just have a knack for creating turnovers. When they create turnovers, I think the defense is really good. When they don't, a la the Pittsburgh Steelers, you wind up losing the ball game.
So for this matchup with Cincinnati, though, is it just give the ball to Alex Collins? I mean, this is a surprise. I mean, this Cincinnati defense has been surprisingly disappointing against the run this year. I mean, they're 31st in the league against the run. Obviously, their offensive problems have kind of overshadowed that a little bit, but I mean, they're giving up a lot of yards on the ground, and with the way Collins is playing, is that where it's all going to start in terms of the game plan for Baltimore this Sunday?
You know what? I think so. It's been that way for the last, you know, what, 7 weeks. So, you know, I think for Marty Morningwig, he kind of felt the play-calling rhythm that they needed to be in, and a lot of it has to do with play-action pass as far as, you know, the explosive plays down the field of Mike Wallace, and the only way you're going to really get good play-action passing is if you have a running game. And if you can suck up the linebackers, it makes throwing the mid-range passing attack so much more easier because you have linebackers not in throwing lanes, and you're able to just see the receiver come open and have him create separation from the safety or from the corner. So ultimately, it is about Alex Collins. It is about, you know, getting into a strong rhythm, early downs, you know, getting into a position where it's, you know, second and medium or, you know, third and one, and then taking your chances from there. So that's been the formula, and I don't see them changing it.
Hey, last thing, Kadri. John Harbaugh made some noise a couple of days ago about, you know, like Buffalo's game, the Ravens game was moved to 425 this Sunday, and Harbaugh wondered if it might impact the home field advantage that Baltimore had counted upon for this game. Is that really a factor? Do you think the crowd will be down because of the late start?
I think the crowd here in Baltimore, because of the National Football League and Donald Trump and all of that controversy, I think it really took its toll on the ball club. At least that's what the team has attributed to, you know, some of the home numbers. Then at the same time, you look at, you know, just what you saw in the last few weeks. You saw kind of a fan base that, you know, was really loud and boisterous. I think even, you know, the Cleveland game, as bad as the weather was, you know, the crowd was into it. The Monday night game was somewhat of a disappointment, but you flip it back around and you look at what, you know, they did against Detroit. It was, you know, back at it, you know. So I think what he was, you know, frustrated with was the fact that he saw when you have the home crowd, and you know that, yeah, if they're going to show up at a 1 o'clock game on a holiday like New Year's Eve, then it's going to work out to your advantage, and it can help your home team out, and off you go. But at the same time, you know, when you're struggling to get, you know, the home crowd to show up at a primetime game at night, and it could be potentially cold and people would want to watch it at home, or they made other plans as far as parties, then I think that's where, you know, John Harbaugh is crying a little bit of foul.
All right. I guess that makes sense. Kadri, thanks for this. We appreciate it. Hope we get a chance to talk again sometime.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me on.
Thanks. Kadri Ismail, the color analyst on the Ravens Radio Network in Baltimore. They've got Cincinnati, 4:25 p.m. at M&T Bank Stadium. Kadri played for the Ravens, won a Super Bowl with the Ravens among his many stops in the NFL, and a really good radio guy. You think that, I guess, if Harbaugh says it's a factor and Kadri says it's a factor, who am I to doubt?
Yeah. You're talking about this Trump thing?
Well, not so much the Trump thing as the change in time, you know, affecting the crowd and the home field advantage they might get.
I
don't know.
I don't know if it's the time. The Trump thing, when he mentioned that, I was like, hmm. Yeah. And then I was thinking and I'm saying to myself, okay, you got the Naval Academy right there in Annapolis.
Right.
You know, Maryland's a big Navy town or state just in terms of all the waterways they have there and the ports. So I don't know. Is the military presence that much greater where there'd be – you know, a greater population that was, you know, all bent out of shape with the whole anthem thing when that thing came down. I didn't know if that's what he was getting at. I didn't know where he was going exactly in terms of affecting attendance.
Right. I know what you mean. I think there's been an overall what I got from Kadri there was that there's been an overall decrease in attendance. That might have been an early explanation for it. But as far as this, I mean, I guess I'm just looking at it through the Buffalo lens. Let's face it, if the Bills had a home game here this Sunday against the Dolphins, and it was moved from 1 o'clock to 4:25.
Wouldn't matter.
I think anybody would blink.
No.
Right?
People would just be a little more.
Shift your party plans.
a little more boisterous.
Yeah, right.
Coming into the stadium.
What is your level of optimism going into this game? That's the question we put on the table. We'd like to re-engage with you on that. Phone lines wide open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. That's our Twitter poll. How optimistic are you for the Bills to get this win and make the playoffs? What do you think? On Twitter right now, it's a fairly even ballot. 47% of you say you are cautiously optimistic about the Bills making the playoffs. 43% of you say you're not optimistic at all about the Bills making the playoffs, and 10% say you are very optimistic that the Bills will come out of this weekend with a playoff berth. Let us know what you think. We'd love to talk with you about it. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter, on our poll, or just interact with us on Twitter. Your level of optimism for the Bills making the playoffs this week. What do you think? Give us a call. Let's talk about it. Let's go to Tony in Rochester. Hi, Tony. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, John. Hey, Chris. How's it going, guys?
Great.
Good.
Well, I was cautiously optimistic until Kelso got on the air and just gave the whole game plan away. He's listening
too, and he just broke it down how to beat the Bills.
He's pretty good about that. Yeah, he is pretty good.
But, yeah, you know, I was listening to the show, of course, and about three callers back, I heard the guy talking about that McDermott made the right move by putting in Peterman. And, you know, we all know that that was the wrong move. Nationally, locally, and even though McDermott may not ever admit it, that was the wrong move. And the reason that I'm cautiously optimistic, because that move may be the very move that come back and bite us. You know, I still believe if Tyrod, maybe we wouldn't have won that game.
Yeah.
But I believe if Tyrod was in that game, maybe we would have won. It definitely wouldn't. It wouldn't have went down like it did.
No, you're right.
And now, if this season comes down to that one game keeping us out of the playoffs, Chris, I'm not going to be all in with him.
Well, let me ask you this, Tony. Why would it be that one game? Why not the loss at the Jets on Thursday night or the loss at Cincinnati? Both pretty damaging losses in the big picture. Why wouldn't those be the game you would focus on?
Yeah, but, John, that because that move was just so boneheaded.
Hmm.
I mean, and after two picks, why don't you take the guy out after two picks?
Hmm. Well, look, I'd said at the time I would not have made the quarterback change then. They were determined. I remember Chris Brown had the correct verbiage. What did you say? They needed a effective passing game?
It was about
utility.
The functionality.
Functionality
of the
right.
offense, and the offense simply wasn't functioning.
Right.
From a passing game standpoint, and we've seen games, unfortunately, since then, where the offense has struggled almost just as much.
I question how functional it is now.
I mean, we've had, what do we had, two or three games with less than 100 yards passing?
Yeah.
That is not functional at the NFL level, the way the game is played today. Maybe in 1955, but not now. And so I think Coach was watching the progress that Nate Peterman had been making in the practice setting, something that none of us are really privy to, certainly not from start to finish every day, and watching him process things in the film room. And I think he felt this was the time when Nate Peterman was ready. I think the road venue was probably chosen because he's figuring small stadium, not overwhelming, and not the pressure of the home fans getting on him if he struggles early. I think all of these things were weighed in, and he said, now is the time. On the hindsight's always 20/20, as we know. Mm-hmm. Was it a miscalculation? Absolutely.
Yes.
There's no question about it. I think the reason people are getting hung up on it is because the Chargers are still sitting there on the doorstep right behind Buffalo. And if the Chargers are the team that get in and the Bills are the team that is left out, I think it will magnify that decision just by virtue of who's in and who's out. Because everybody will point to that one game.
Right. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Jim in West Seneca. Jim, welcome to the show. You're on the air with us.
Hey, thank you, guys. Happy New Year, John and Chris.
Thank you. Happy New Year, Jim.
Yeah, you know, we've rehashed that, and I think there's pretty a good general consensus that, you know, he thought he was doing the right thing, McDermott, and it just didn't work out. So, you know, but I'm not going to hold that game against us. I really look to that Carolina game. You know, we were just so close. All we needed was a touchdown, any offense, and you know, we could have had that one. But, you know, as far as the quarterback situation's concerned and everything, I'd love to keep Tyrod on our roster. I think he's a great backup. I just don't see it being practical. You know, he's just going to want too much money, and, you know, I don't think it's going to work out. But as far as the playoffs are concerned this year, you know, I'm optimistic. I think the Bills are going to put Miami away. I really think we're going to win this game, and I look towards that Baltimore Cincinnati game as the other peg to fit in the hole, so to speak. I think Cincinnati can do it for us. You know, I really do. So thank you guys for taking my call, and have a great New Year.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for your call. Sean McDermott was talking to the media earlier today, and he talked about this game, the importance of this game, the Bills and the Dolphins. And he talked about the fact that this clearly is the biggest game of the year so far for the Bills, but they have played some other big games. Here's what the head coach had to say.
We have played in games big games, the word you use there. We really look at every game as a big opportunity more than anything to continue to grow. This one really, and I don't want to minimize the importance of the game as it relates to playoff implications. From a performance standpoint, it's important that we put it in its context so that we can perform. Our guys can play at a high level and play, at a level that is the best level that they played out up to this point in the season. So, for us, it's a great opportunity to do that. And then the growth that comes from that will benefit us in the future.
Yeah, do you feel like that's sort of the next step for some of these guys is, they've played a lot of this season with, that underdog mentality, nothing to lose. Now there's a lot to lose, and these guys get to learn how to play in like a real pressure cooker environment.
Well, I think that's a certain type of mindset. The other type of mindset is more of a positive mindset and one that I think that elite performers embrace. And it's not so much what you can lose, it's what can be gained from this type of opportunity. And there's a lot that can be gained, certainly the result, but also the process within the game, the process of this week, so much valuable experience for our young team that they can use moving forward. And that's a great part of it.
Sean McDermott talking to the media this morning about the nature of the fact that it is a big game. And in classic McDermott style, Chris, he reverted back to the process, thinking not just about Sunday, but what could the benefits that could accrue from playing in a big game this Sunday down the road, next year, et cetera.
He says we always think short-term and long-term, and he certainly verbalizes it also in press conferences. Yeah. So you're not saying it unless you're thinking about it.
Yep. One of many big games on the NFL schedule, and who better to break it down than our man Greg Cosell. He is a producer, executive producer, and analyst for NFL Matchup on ESPN, getting set for his regular Friday visit with us. Greg Cosell coming up next. We are just about 90 minutes away from hockey across the parking lot over at New Era Field for the World Juniors game, USA and Canada. And the parking lot's beginning to fill up out here at One Bills Drive. Chris and I here until 3. Stick around. The John Murphy Show presented by NEPA Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy with Chris Brown sitting in for Donald Jones. Donald will be back next Tuesday, our next show after today. Every Friday we do this, we take a look around the NFL, and in particular, the matchups in the Bills game with the best in the business. He is executive producer, analyst for NFL Matchup on ESPN, senior producer at NFL Films. Happy to have Greg Cosell on the line with us. Greg, it's John Murphy and Chris Brown up here in Buffalo. Happy New Year to you. Thanks for joining us.
Happy New Year to you guys, too. Chris, good to be with you.
Good to have you.
Hey, Greg, it's, we know this matchup. We were just here 2 weeks ago. Anything at all changed between this matchup, between the Bills and the Dolphins in the ensuing couple of weeks here?
Not likely at this time of year. I mean, I'm sure there'll be tweaks made by both teams, but nothing dramatic is going to change. The Bills will not be a different team this week than they were 2 weeks ago. Murph, I like the Bills' chances in this game, As we've talked before, I think that the Bills could win this game, and then, unfortunately, they don't control their fate, but right. I like the Bills in this game.
You know, that game 2 weeks ago, the one thing that many of us hanging our hat on is the three long first-half touchdown drives that Buffalo had against the Dolphins. Sort of set the tone. Even though it was an 8-point margin of victory, it felt like the Bills took control of the game pretty early 2 weeks ago.
No, I would agree with that, and there was particularly a good one, I believe, at the end of the first half, which was very impressive. No, I thought that was a really good mix. They, as we've discussed all throughout the year, Merv, the Bills, when it comes to the pass game, there are certain ways they have to play, and in that game, there were a number of plays that were very much like that. There was the O'Leary 25-yarder on the first possession. There was a Clay 29-yarder to start the third possession. These are sort of representative of the Bills and their first and 10 passing game, which with Tyrod, they have to be efficient at. And when they are efficient, they create some big plays.
Yeah, and the thing that jumped out to me was last week against New England, they got some 30-plus yard plays. They got four of them. I mean, Deontay Thompson had two. They had a long play down the field to Benjamin, and then Shady had the other one out of the backfield for big yardage. I'm just wondering if Tyrod's at a point now where he feels comfortable with all of these new weapons that have been added through the course of the year, whether it's Thompson, Benjamin now, who he looked more comfortable than ever throwing to. I mean, he was barely a factor in this first Dolphins game, but last week Benjamin has kind of a breakout game, the touchdown reversal notwithstanding. I'm wondering if they can take it another step the second time around here against Miami.
Well, Chris, I think what you're hoping with Benjamin, and whether it happens this week or as we go forward, is you're hoping if it is Tyrod going forward, obviously it will be this week, is that he gives them at least some other options that they didn't have before, in the sense that, and we saw it a little bit this week on the 35-yarder, you see the X-ISO throw where you can throw it to Kelvin, and he, in a sense, is like a DeAndre Hopkins in that regard. You line him up at X, you get the one-on-one matchup, and you can throw him the football for the contested catch, and he can make those contested catches. That's what you're hoping you can now get. Because for the most part, the big plays in the passing game for this offense come on first and 10 plays, you know, through what I guess what we would call shot plays, where it's play action. The Thompson 46-yarder to start the second possession this week was a classic case of that, that throwback off the little boot action.
Yeah.
That's the way they get their big plays in the passing game. They haven't been able to get them in many other ways this year, and that needs to expand if they're to become a better team.
Greg, we've talked about the limitations in Buffalo's passing offense all season long with you, Greg, and I just wonder, and this is not a postmortem time yet, but I wonder, can you boil it down? Is it Tyrod's limitations, which have been well documented, or is it the fact that, you know, they've had kind of a rotating cast of characters at the wide receiver spot? What's been the biggest hurdle to them having an effective passing game?
I mean, I think the general consensus would be that there are limitations, some limitations with Tyrod Taylor. He's not consistently accurate. I think there are times that he leaves throws on the field within timing and structure that need to be made. Because of his inconsistency with accuracy, he misses too many routine throws that need to be made. So the question becomes, Murph, how much can you compensate and camouflage that within the context of an overall offense and the rest of your team? You don't need to have Tom Brady as your quarterback to be able to compete and make the playoffs. Then you get into what else do you have? Does a Kelvin Benjamin help you in the sense that, hey, he can make contested catches? He increases the catch radius because of his size. So in some ways that can compensate for the fact that Tyrod is not a precisely accurate thrower. So there's other ways you try to go about doing that if you're committed to Tyrod Taylor.
We're with Greg Cosell for the executive producer and analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN. Chris, you had another question?
Yeah, I mean, and Greg, I don't know if the way you grind down on film can have you give us a specific answer on this, but coming out of the locker room after halftime has been a preeminent problem for the Bills offense in terms of stringing drives together, putting points on the board. I think they've been outscored 41-15 in their last seven games in the third quarter. They're near the bottom of the league in terms of point production on first possession coming out of the locker room. Is there anything that you've been able to discern in kind of looking at their third quarter offensive play that says this is an execution issue or this is a coaching adjustment issue coming out of the locker room and that's why they're struggling in the third quarter?
Well, Chris, I would say this. I can't. And I don't want to give people the wrong impression because I haven't studied that particular thing in finite detail. So I will just give you my overall sense of the kind of offense they are. I think they're an execution style offense. In other words, I don't think there's an awful lot that they do, which isn't a bad or a good thing. It's not a value judgment. There's plenty of teams that can have good offenses just because they execute really, really well on a consistent basis. But I think it's a team that pretty much has to function and execute really well within the concepts that they put out there. I don't know how much more they can do. And then it gets back to Murph's question. You know, look, Tyrod Taylor, he's an NFL quality starting quarterback. He doesn't turn it over a lot. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. I wouldn't call him a poor decision maker, but I think there are some limitations as a passer. So ultimately, yeah, you have to start with that. When teams don't do a lot in the pass game and the Bills don't, normally that's because of the quarterback. They're telling you how they feel about the quarterback.
Right.
So, Chris, I think at the end of the day, there's only so much they can do within the context of their pass game.
We're on the line with Greg Cosell from NFL Matchup on ESPN. Let's talk about the quarterback on the other side of Hard Rock Stadium, Jay Cutler, who, you know, to me is the walking definition of arm talent, but it just doesn't add up to much, right?
No, and, you know, it's funny because, you know, I start doing college work as well. I'll probably get to that starting, you know, next week, the week after, just because by the end of the week I won't have NFL tape to grind through. And that whole position has changed. You know, I'm really anxious to see how I start to feel about the Baker Mayfields and others, because, the you know, 10, 15 years ago, the Baker Mayfields and the Lamar Jacksons would have been sixth-round afterthoughts. But the reason I mention that is because I'm getting to Jay Cutler. I've always had, I guess, a bias toward arm talent. And so Jay Cutler was a guy I always liked. And, you know, finally, a couple of years ago, I just realized that, yes, he has tremendous arm talent, but there's just not a whole lot of timing, rhythm to his game. He misses too many things. And, you know, after a while, I think with Jay Cutler, he sort of evolved into what he is. I mean, he's a very inconsistent player, capable of a great throw at any given time, but he's just too erratic a player.
And looking at, you know, the weapons, he certainly has weapons there, but they're outside of Landry, they're largely inconsistent. And the good news for Buffalo is it looks like E.J. Gaines is going to be back in the lineup this week. I know he's not solely responsible for this, but the Bills are 7-3 when Gaines starts. It just seems like when they have White and Gaines both on the corners there, they just seem to be a better coverage unit overall, and I feel a lot better about some of those matchups, even though the talent there that they put on the field, the Dolphins, is pretty darn impressive on paper.
Oh, for sure. You know, it's – I think Parker's been the big disappointment for them, quite honestly, because he was the 14th pick in the draft. I think when he was drafted, there were some who looked at his body type and his movement and thought of A.J. Green, and he certainly hasn't become that. But I think he's been a disappointment. The one guy, and Chris, I don't know what you think of him, because I didn't really know what to think of him after I watched him at Alabama. I think Kenyon Drake over the last five weeks has looked very good. Now, you know, people say to me, well, is he their feature back for next year? That's hard for me to answer right now. I don't know what your opinion is on that, but he certainly has shown very, very well with good running traits over the last month.
Yeah, he'd be a number one back on my team. Sure. I wouldn't have a problem with it.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy. You think about all the people he was buried behind at Alabama. I mean, they're all playing in the NFL too, but
sure. He's
just got that breakaway home run hitting ability that is so attractive, and he can run behind his pads too.
Yeah, he showed better lateral agility than I thought he had watching him in Alabama. I mean, he's made unblocked defenders miss in the backfield a number of times with quick lateral movement, so he's been impressive on tape.
Hey, Greg, before we let you go, you mentioned you think the Bills will win, but they might not get the help they need. They need help from Cincinnati, but they go to Baltimore to play a Baltimore Ravens team that's, what, won 5 of 6, and Joe Flacco's playing as well as he has all year, maybe in the last couple of years, the last week or two.
Yeah, I mean, they're an offense that's really based on base personnel, a lot of tight formations. They throw play action off of it. They've been trying to get the ball at the intermediate and deeper levels a little bit more. It's easy to get on Joe Flacco. I don't know what his health has been all year with that back. They've certainly had a revolving door at wide receiver. No one has really become that guy, even a tight end. It's been a little tough. I like Alex Collins. I actually very much liked him coming out of Arkansas. But I think their defense can carry them as well in this particular game, which would be sad for Bills fans. But what Dean Pease does with that defense in terms of the pressure concepts and the looks and the blitz packages, I think he does a really good job, often overlooked in the league.
You know, back in week two, Tennessee handled Jacksonville, beat them by 21 points. Now the rematch in a game that's important to Buffalo. They seem like those are two teams that have gone in totally different directions as the season's played out.
Yeah, Tennessee's a bit of a head-scratcher for me because, you know, this is just my – everything, as you know, Murph, is based on film. I'm not in locker rooms. I watch the tape. And to me, Tennessee is not playing to what I think is the strength of their offensive personnel. I look at their O-line, with the exception of Taylor Lewan, as a little slow, a little plodding, not particularly athletic. I look at their two backs. Obviously, Murray's not going this week, but I look at Murray and Henry. To me, they're kind of – neither one has great lateral quickness. They're not guys who can create and can find space at this point. And they build their offense around that. I look at Mariota. To me, he's really comfortable when you put him in 11 personnel, spread him, put him in the gun with wide receivers. I think they have quality wide receivers. And there's a disconnect between their run game and their pass game. And so I struggle with their offense.
And the last one I want to ask you about, and, you know, if you think the Raiders can do the Bills a favor and win at Los Angeles against the Chargers, then you're kind of hanging your hat on Derek Carr. Not to write the postmortem before the patient is officially dead, but I'm sure you've broken down some Oakland Raiders video. The accounts for the drop back from Derek Carr this year? What happened to him this year?
You know, when I watch their tape, I see an offense that's totally out of sync in terms of the timing of the quarterback and his drops and the depth of the receiver's routes. There's just too many times where Carr takes a quick game drop, let's say a three-step drop, and receivers are running routes that go with a five-step drop. There's something not right there. And, again, I'm not there. But the one thing I will say, Murph, just to give hope perhaps, is their defense over the last month since Pagano became the DC has clearly played better. It's not talked about because everybody focuses on Carr, but their defense has clearly played better over the last month, particularly the pass defense, particularly defending between the numbers. They've gotten a lot better.
All right. You're helping us keep hope alive.
Finishing on a high note there. That was good. I like that. That made me feel a lot better.
Well, you know, I'd like to see the Bills keep playing.
Yeah,
but,
me too.
We'll see what happens. I mean, you know, I feel good about them this week. I just don't know if Baltimore is going to lose at home to Cincinnati in our frigid weather, but you guys know all about that.
Yes, we do. I'm going to stick my head out the door here in the commercial break. Greg, thanks for this. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks. Have a great new year.
Yeah, happy new year.
Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst of NFL Matchup on ESPN, senior producer at NFL Films with his breakdown of the Bills matchup against the Dolphins and the other games that impact the Bills. Chris and I back with more in a moment. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Reed's Gens brings you the diamond in the rough. This week, it's punter Colton Schmidt. He came into the league as an undrafted free agent in 2013, and he came to Buffalo the next year after brief stints in San Francisco and in Cleveland. In his second year with the Bills, Colton Schmidt set the Buffalo Bills' all-time single-season record for net punting average at 41.3 yards per punt. This season, against the Colts in Week 14 in a heavy snowfall, Schmidt had six punts, averaged 38 yards, and pinned the Colts inside their own 20-yard line twice. Colton Schmidt, this week's Diamond in the Rough, presented by Reed's Gens, the official jeweler of the Buffalo Bills. Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Chris Brown, filling in for Donald Jones, scheduled to be back with us next Tuesday to pick up the show. Who knows where we'll be next Tuesday. It's kind of interesting, Chris. We were talking today. We had a brief content meeting this morning, and the question came up, what does Monday look like? And everybody's like, I don't know, right?
Nobody knows.
It's kind of fun to be like in that sort of limbo, knowing that
right. It
could be really cool or it could be very disappointing.
Wait a second. Wait a second here. Monday is New Year's Day.
Tuesday. No, Monday. I mean Monday, yeah.
Monday is New Year's Day.
Yeah.
So if the Bills win and make the playoffs and the players get New Year's Day off, like, you know, see you Tuesday from coach, do we get New Year's Day off?
You're asking the wrong guy. I already.
I just thought of that.
Yeah, and that's it. Really, where I posed that question to the powers that be and was told, just chill, just wait and see what happens. Which is the only way you can be. It's kind of fun to be like this.
Holding pattern, we stay.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I kind of like being in this position.
Okay.
We're asking you your thoughts on your level of optimism. Let's take a call or two on this. Joe calling from Batavia. Hello, Jay. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks, John.
Sure.
Thank you guys for having me so much. I'm actually pretty optimistic about the Buffalo Bills. I'm not really worried about the Ravens or anything like that. I just think we're going to have a great time. But the one thing I really worry about is the refs cheating us, you know? It just seems like every week they're always out to get us. other than that, I'm just pretty optimistic. I think the Bills are going to do great this Sunday. It just comes down to the refs.
Yeah. Refs aren't out to get the Bills, and the refs aren't out to promote the Patriots, which was a narrative that came up here last week.
Who's our crew this week?
Jeff Triplett.
Oh, okay.
Do you have any opinions on that?
Not terribly. He's kind of middle-of-the-road ref.
Right,
it's
right.
Not Walt Coleman. It's not Ed Hockley, who's going to over-officiate. You know, it's not Anderson.
Walt Anderson.
Yeah. Those guys have been notorious So fortunately, it's not any of those Jerome Boger, not one of my favorites. So that's good. Triplett is – I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
I'm
we'll okay. be all right. All right, coming up next, we're getting to the top of the hour here, and Lorenzo Alexander is going to join us in studio for this week's edition of The Lowdown. Also coming up next hour, Chris Brown with head coach Sean McDermott, Coffee with a Coach, and, of course, more of your phone calls. What's your level of optimism as the Bills get set to go into this weekend with a chance to get a playoff spot? Give us a call. Let us know what you think at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Chris and I back in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update from One Bills Drive. Bills wrapped up practice about an hour and a half ago after a 90-minute workout inside the App Pro Sports Training Center. Wide receiver Deontay Thompson is going to be a game-time decision on Sunday. Left practice early yesterday with a shoulder injury. If he can't go, there would be a chance, you would think, that Brandon Riley might get a chance to be in the game day roster. Left tackle Deion Dawkins excused from practice today for personal reasons, but he is expected to play on Sunday. Calvin Benjamin should be good to go, according to head coach Sean McDermott. And Sharice Wright is still in concussion protocol, did not practice. Miami Dolphins have injury issues of their own. Left tackle Laremy Tunsil with the ankle injury did not practice the last couple of days. No word yet if he got in a workout today. The Dolphins started the season 4-2. They've lost 7 of their last 9 games, and they finish up the season with nothing to play for this week at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. Kickoff is 4:25. The Bills and the Dolphins. You can catch the game right here on our flagship radio station in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. The news from the New York Jets: head coach Todd Bowles and general manager Mike Maccagnan are going to get a chance to return next year. They're both about to wrap up their third seasons with the team. Bowles, 20 wins, 27 losses in his 3 seasons so far. The team announced today they've extended the contracts of both Bowles and Mike Maccagnan. New York Giants hired Dave Gettleman as their new general manager. The 66-year-old started his NFL work here in Buffalo way back in 1986. He spent 15 years with the Giants and then spent the last 4 seasons as the Carolina Panthers general manager. Gettleman says he plans on staying with Eli Manning at quarterback for the Giants next year. For the Buffalo Sabres, game tonight in New Jersey. They play the Devils, the third of 7 straight games away from home. Faceoff is 7 o'clock tonight. And a game right across the parking lot at New Era Field, starting in just about an hour. It is the World Juniors game. It is Team USA against Canada. USA lost to Slovakia last night by a score of 3-2. Local college basketball, Canisius home, 4:30 this afternoon against Ryder. And the Niagara Purple Eagles play Iona College tonight, 7 o'clock at the Gallagher Center. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, along with Chris Brown, who's in for the vacationing Donald Jones. It is Friday. It is 2 o'clock, and that means it is time for The Lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander, Bills veteran linebacker Lorenzo Alexander, in studio with us for The Lowdown. Happy New Year, Lorenzo. How are you?
Happy New Year's. I'm doing great. Donald's on what?
Vacation.
Wow.
Week 17.
Yeah, well, I'm just glad I'm in here with two professionals.
Right,
you know? Normally we have one professional, and then, you know.
When you're in here next week, you've got to let him have it.
I just can't believe it. Well, how do you sign up for a gig and just leave? You know, we're still in the thick of things here. I mean, so he's just going to come back when we get to the playoff next week, then he's all good again? I mean, what? This is crazy. I don't understand it.
In fact, to let you know that he's on vacation and you and him have this banter going on, obviously, on a regular basis, Donald sent in a picture of where he is this afternoon as we do the show. And there it is, with some weird-looking socks on and what look like sweatpants, just chilling.
Dogs on those socks? What is that?
If you're not careful, you can end up staying there permanently. I mean, that's just what happens. I mean, I'm just saying, that's what happened. We got Kristen here doing a great job. Sometimes people can take advantage of their opportunities.
Little Wally Pip.
Donald, you can just stay there.
It's always the highlight of the week for me. When you and Donald go at it on Fridays, it's always one of the highlights of the week.
I enjoy it, too. He's a great dude.
He is a good man. And we wish him a happy new year as well.
Yep.
Both Chris and I were thinking, as the show began today, you know, when the season's not over, I'm not getting to postmortems here yet.
Right, yeah.
But we each separately had conversations with you about a year ago about this year and what this year would look like. Chris made a point earlier about just passengers on board and how you got to get
well, player. Well, Lorenzo and I had a conversation late last year, and it was when a bunch of players, you being one of them, kind of voiced to the media that we as players have to hold each other more accountable to get more consistent results on the field. And then after the media kind of went away, I just talked with Lorenzo just a little bit longer, and he started explaining to me how Every roster in the NFL has players who live in the gray. They're right. not clearly this kind of player or that kind of player. They're just somewhere messing around in between. They're not a true pros pro, doing everything to the letter, going the extra mile. They're talented enough to get away with that, right. to hang on rosters long enough to have some kind of a career. I was telling Murph, after I had that conversation with you, I actually went back to my desk and I went down the roster yeah. and I said, how many guys could we see here that live in the gray? And I probably had about 8 to 10.
Right.
And this year, I feel like if you go down that roster, you'd be hard-pressed to find one, two. Would you agree with that?
I would agree. I mean, you know, being around this new culture that Coach McDermott is kind of establishing and set up and really been consistent with, if you even, you know, tip your toe in the gray, you out of here. I mean, he don't play. I mean, in this, I mean, we've seen it from, you know, guys on the top end of that roster as far as talent-wise, and then guys kind of rotating in and out at that bottom half of that roster with practice squad guys in with them trying to find people. You know, you can come in one week, you know, he kind of addresses the other day. You come in the first week, you know, everybody's spry-eyed, ready to go. But week, second week, third week, you know, they start dipping, and those guys find themselves, you know, kind of back in that free agency market, kind of rotating yeah. around the league again. And I think that is key as far as establishing consistency and a standard in an organization. And he has to continue to keep that up, which I don't see why he wouldn't. And then obviously you draft guys, and I think that's obviously you add draft guys and talent guys and free agent guys you bring in that have talent and are pros. And that's ultimately how you really create some consistency long term.
Yeah, because as much as you guys want to mentor some of these young players, just being around guys like Trey and Zay and Deion,
right.
it doesn't look as though, at least from the outside looking in, you're in the locker room yeah. every day, you can tell me different, that there had to be a lot of hand-holding with those guys. Those guys no. seem to have the right mindset for what being a pro is. I mean, you guide them here and there.
But they allowed you to mentor them. You yeah. know, you have a lot of guys come in and figure, oh, I made it, I'm a draft pick, you know, I did all this, and you can't even talk to them and yeah. like, hey, you can do this a little bit better, or this is what I do and to stay like, in the league yeah, as long as yeah, yeah. you, yeah, yeah, and kind of move on. You know, I'm out here making plays. Those guys really listen, pay attention to the small things, and just allow you, you know, into their lives and allow you to speak to them, you know, as men.
Hey, Lorenzo, I'm sitting here thinking, why would not every coach insist on, you know, staying out of the gray? And I'm thinking it's probably talent, right? Talent.
Yeah, well, talent, you know, is king in most people's eyes.
It blinds you, too.
Yeah, it can blind, right. You know, you have an ultra-talented guy that's going to go out there and help you win games. At the end of the day, that's what it's all about. But what about those seasons when you don't win or you come up? Because most teams are not going to the playoffs every year. Most teams ain't winning championships every year. But if you have a handful of those guys, you know, and then you bring in some young guys, eventually it's going to end up turning itself upside down where you have a team full of guys that are underachievers because they just don't know how to work the right way.
I was thinking about a conversation, a former Bills coach who I won't mention, told me about a conversation he had with Bill Parcells. Parcells, I think at this point, was at the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking pregame about some, you know, issues and roster issues. And Parcells said to this former Bills coach, talent makes prostitutes of us all. And I think that's yeah. probably true, right, as a head coach.
I mean, yeah, I mean,
that's yeah, an interesting I mean, word to throw in that
Right,
sentence.
If you have a guy that is an all-pro caliber, let's say a Reggie White type of talent that has that ability but doesn't necessarily show up and do all the little things that you would like him to do, lead, lift weights, eat right, be on time, but he's out there giving you 3 sacks and being disruptive, something. I mean, you can live with it. Even myself as a player, I say, okay, at least I know he's going to show up on Sundays. Yeah. And ball out. I mean, I have a hard time with it is if I get that guy one Sunday and then the next Sunday is somebody else, then the next Sunday, okay, he may be there, then he disappears for 3 weeks. But if somebody can do that consistently, and I've seen guys do it, they just do everything against the rule book that you would say, oh, this dude is not going to be any good, but go out there every single week and show up, you can live with it as a player and a coach because you know he's going to help you win to your right. end goal.
With Lorenzo Alexander on this Friday afternoon as the Bills get set to head to Miami. I have a question for you about a conversation we had on this show almost a year ago. When you talked about – when you looked ahead to the 2017 season, you talked about being more of a leader and especially right. a vocal leader for this group. Did you find that to be the case this past season?
Yeah, when I had my moments, I definitely spoke up. I think it's necessary for guys, you know, like myself and other guys that we have on this team to step. So it doesn't always come from Kyle Williams. I mean, obviously, I think when everybody thinks of leadership on this team, you think of Kyle.
Right.
And sometimes you can have a message. And if it comes from the same guy, it kind of falls on deaf ears.
Sure.
So I've definitely took advantage of when I've had those opportunities and not making it forced or phony. But with that said, my strength is the personal relationships, things where I have when we're like in walkthrough, I'm in the back with three young guys and we're talking about something, you know, football related or maybe something off the field. They're not feeling a certain way. A coach said something or something happened or at the locker room, or at the, you know, sitting down and at the locker kind of talking about life and how can you do better on the field. I think that's where my strength is and that's where I do best. So that's why I think I really excel. But like you said, I did take advantage of some more opportunities as far as speaking in front of the group, whether it's the defense, my position group, or the team.
See, because I get a sense, and I get a sense that Coach McDermott, you know, with the leadership council, has kind of encouraged that, like promoted it almost,
right,
saying go out and do that.
Yeah.
And I don't know that every coach impresses that upon veteran players. Some players take it upon themselves to do that, but when you have a coach backing you up and saying, yeah, I want you to influence this kid.
Yeah.
I want you to, because
he's been intentional. He's creating that atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, letting guys, and really not, I don't want to say forcing, but putting guys, when you're on that player council, you're kind of in a position of where you feel like you have to do something. So
yeah,
maybe if you wasn't on it, you say, I won't do it. But since you're on that council, okay, I feel obligated that I need to, okay, maybe I need to speak to this guy. Especially for younger leaders that maybe not feel as obligated quite as yet in their career because they're still worried about, you know, making plays and staying active and, you know, and keeping their job.
Have there been times this year where, you know, Coach, I know Coach always tries to keep his ear to the ground in terms of the pulse of the locker room, and he relies on you guys on that council to provide that to him. Were there one or two instances that stand out through the course of this year where Coach was like, wow, thanks for, like, cluing me in on something, or vice versa,
yeah,
where
– I think the biggest one that stands out is doing all the protests early in the season around the Denver week, you know, kind of going out on, I think maybe the walkthrough Saturday. I think after our president said those comments, some guys had some rumblings. You know, he said, you know, if you ever hear about guys wanting to kneel or whatnot, you know, just come talk to me. And we were able to address it as a team. And,
right,
and it didn't become a distraction because we spearheaded it and had a great conversation beforehand and was able to come out so nobody was caught off guard or surprised,
right,
whether it was ownership or him or players, and we were all on the same page when it came down to it.
No, you're talking about that as you, and again, this is not a postmortem because the season's not over, but as you look back at that, you're plugged into the league. Did some teams handle that situation better than others?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, some guys were proactive. Some guys were all on the same page. I think our ownership did a great job. I don't think we around the league, you got that type of participation or understanding or I don't know the right word, being connected or grounded from ownership, from just understanding where players were coming from,
like,
and having, yeah, just the conversation that you'd be able to have,
yeah,
with ownership was key and being open like that. So yeah, I thought our organization handled it great, and I think that was just a great job of players communicating to coach, you know, this is an issue, we need to talk about it.
We got football to talk about. We got a meaningful big game against the Dolphins coming on Sunday. It's pretty big. It's as big, you know.
That was four bigs in there.
Right.
Well, I mean, the history of this franchise, Lorenzo, there has not been a final Sunday of the season since 2004.
And
where
that,
it meant
it's
anything.
Crazy because Kyle was saying he's never been in the last season of the game, and it means something, which is amazing. And it's Kyle, the work and effort and passion that he lives. I mean, with, you know, it's. You feel bad for a guy like that, you know, never really having that opportunity to be there. So, I mean, obviously this game, everybody wants to do it for themselves, but knowing that he's on our roster and everything that he means to this team and organization and community, you even want to go out there and do it more so.
Doing it means beating the Dolphins. Let's talk about some of your keys, the lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander. In the first matchup with Miami just 2 weeks ago, Kenyon Drake never got off, but he was productive.
Yeah, he was productive, and he's actually a guy I think it's a young star in this league and is going to continue to progress. And, I said this last time I was on the air, it made sense why they got rid of Ajayi after we played him. And so, I mean, the dude has power, can make you miss, and then has some juice. I mean, he had one play last time where he broke out to our sideline, and I had a pretty good angle on him, and he turned it on. I said, ooh, this dude can run, too.
Yeah.
So he's just a complete package. And, obviously, the run has been an issue of ours on and off throughout this season. I don't necessarily think Miami likes to run the ball, but if we allow him to get going early and often, they'll keep handing it off. So
that's why a good start there could really – I mean, it doesn't take much to turn
them into a one-dimensional team, right.
So you get their first three possessions. If you're able to kind of hold him in check, I got to believe – Gase is just going to start calling pass plays all over the place. And he's done that so much this year.
Right. And they had a little bit of success on this last time, and they still got away from it. I'm pretty sure that has something to do with the scores, creating some turnovers, and kind of getting up on them. But, yeah, that's the key to really make it even a quicker process to become a one-dimensional game is knock out, the first three or four runs they come at us with and really make them feel like they need to throw the ball around with Jay.
There was one Kenyon Drake run in the first matchup a couple weeks ago, Bills bench side. He turned the right corner, and you could see Micah Hyde, who can run.
Yeah.
And he totally.
It was all of us. Yeah. I was in that pack. That's the one run I'm talking about.
We're talking about the same play.
Yeah, I asked him, Micah, did he make you feel slow? Like he made me feel slow on that play? Because he turned the juice on. I was like, my God, thank God the side, he ran out of real estate there.
Yeah. Well, he's got fresh legs because he barely played in Alabama.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Give me all the
fresh
excuses.
Legs.
Contain Kenyon Drake, low down number one. Number two, this is intriguing to me because you do have that talent up front on Miami's defensive line. I thought, and it's fresh in my memory, I thought Vlad Dukas just battled with Ndamukong Suh a couple weeks ago, and I don't know that either one of them got the better of the other.
Right.
But I just love the way that Dukas just hung in there, and he won some, Suh won some. It was just a great – you're going to have to do it again.
And you have to keep doing it. And I really think it's all about starting fast. Those guys, if they beat you early, they start feeling themselves, and once you get that confidence as a D lineman – it's really hard to stop because now you think, okay, is he going to bull me? Is he going to long arm me? Is he going to spin on me? You know, what type of move? So with being physically dominant, starting the game quick and fast and making sure they're playing on their heels and we're not playing on ours. And obviously Cameron Wake on the outside, being able to hold him down and keep him off balance with some of our boot game, obviously getting Shady going, all that's going to help the offensive line be able to block these guys.
You know, my broadcast partner on Sundays, Mark Kelso, is a huge Pat DeMarco fan. And as I look back at the Bills-Dolphins game from 2 weeks ago, DeMarco played a role in controlling
that
game.
21 personnel was big for you.
Yeah, right. He had a big role to play in that first game.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing some chip blocking, obviously in the boot game, getting up, moving the pocket, doing all those type of things. It can really throw you off as a defensive lineman. And anytime you really see 21 personnel, you're thinking run anyway. So if you can throw some passes out of that base personnel, they can always slow down the D lineman as well.
Miami, I don't want you – well, if I ask this question, you'll have to trash him. But the sum of all that talent doesn't add up to a good team, and it's puzzling.
There is a lot of talent on that.
Actually bothers me to see an underachieving team with all that talent.
But I think that's throughout the NFL, you'll see. Everybody has great talent. I mean, obviously more on – if you look on paper, but it's more than talent. I think as we were discussing earlier, I mean, it's chemistry, playing well, getting teams at the right time, being healthy at the right time. There's a lot of things that go into winning on Sundays that you might not necessarily see outside of just saying, "Ooh, I got a ton of players on my roster." I always, when people talk about talent, I always say the Dallas Cowboys when you had 11 Pro Bowlers and didn't win a playoff game that year. I mean, so they had tons of talent, but so it has to be something more that you don't really see or can't really contain or even talk about that leads to winning.
Speaking of not experiencing. Before, as you mentioned, Kyle's one of them, a game with this much on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a sense in the locker room that everybody's got the right mindset to kind of let it all hang out on Sunday and not get tight?
Right.
You know, if the game doesn't maybe start off the right way or what have you, you're going to face some measure of adversity in any game you play. But when the stakes are this high, how do you feel about the group as a whole going in that they're not going to grip, if something goes wrong or there's a bad play?
Right. I think we've had enough of that throughout the season, a lot of ups and downs, and had to fight through a lot of things to where guys understand playing loose is the only way that's going to kind of get you to the other end that where you want to be at, that you can't just hang your hat on something that happened in the first quarter bad to you. You have to be able to move on to the next play. And hopefully even like last week was another learning opportunity, with that touchdown or catch controversy with KB. That kind of took us in the half, and people were kind of still talking about it. And, guys like, hey, let's squash it. Let's move on. Obviously, we came out and played strong in the third and kind of lost the game in the fourth quarter. But I think it showed that guys were able to move on. So that's always our message, especially when we come to the sideline and something bad happens or the series doesn't go as well as it should have. Forget about it. Let's make our corrections, of course, but let's move on and come back out and start fast the next series of drive.
Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us going through the lowdown, his list of keys for the game. Lorenzo, it seems to me that as uneven as the defensive performance has been for much of this season for the Bills, when your defense is at its best, you're taking the ball away, right?
You would have to. Yeah, and I think that's with any defense. If you can take the ball away, at a high level. Obviously, you're not only stopping drives and taking points off the board, but you're giving your offense more opportunities to create drives and put points on the board for them, and you rest more as well, because then their defense is tired, your offense has a rhythm, has more opportunities to score the ball. So that's our whole thing, and this year we've been able to get through, I think, the ball in the end zone twice as a defense. So if we can continue to do that, last time we intercepted Jay, I want to say three times.
Yep.
Had another ball on the ground, our hands on another ball. If we can continue to take the ball away, we'll definitely find ourselves in the win column this week, because that just takes your win percentage way up.
Mental toughness counts in a game of this magnitude. Just going back to my previous question, mm-hmm. about, you know, not gripping, just playing and, you know, playing hard and fast on every single play. If there's one thing that looks like it's grown, you know, with the collective play of this team, it is the mental toughness, something that for a lot of teams since the turn of the century here in Buffalo have lacked in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things go wrong and bang, the tents get folded and there's no battle back. There's no climb back into a game kind of thing. Do you feel like the mental toughness has taken a step with this team this year collectively?
Yeah, I mean, I think over the course of the season, and I think Sean has done a great job of continue to harp on it throughout the season. We have this thing talking about Kaizen, where you have to deal with the ebbs and flows of a game or even in life, the ups and downs, you're going to have them, but you want to continue to respect the process and continue to get better and not really judge yourself off the highs and the lows. You know, you're never as good as people tell you are, and you're never as bad as people tell you are. Just continue to try to get better each and every single week and each and every single game. And that's even within a game, play to play, trying to maintain that steady increase throughout the game and not get caught up in the ebbs and flows, which is hard to do.
Right. Well, because it's an emotional sport.
Right.
But if that has taken hold, then the common belief in that locker room is we are miles better here in week 17 than we were in week 1.
Yeah,
so
of
you
course.
Naturally play with more confidence and belief in self no matter what happens on the field. Is that logical to think? Am I off the mark there?
No, I would say so. I mean, we've been with these guys, you know, I mean, instead of 2 months, you know, with an off season and a training camp, now you have 16 games playing next to each other, having different guys having to come in and step up. So we're definitely loose. I mean, we have a loose group anyway. If you kind of look at it the way we practice and kind of hang out, we have attention to detail, but there's just
not afraid to boogie.
Right. Just a nice juice, free
there's
atmosphere.
There's a lot of young guys out there,
you know. So, yeah, you've
been Joe Webb.
Joe Webb, Mike T. LJ. I mean, it's a lot of guys that just, you know, loose. So I think we have that loose vibe as it is. We just have to go out there, start fast, and just continue that and understand that even within it, like you're saying, not get caught up in the ups and downs, be able to play through that and still be able to play loose from play to play.
Yeah. Steve Tasker was out here the other day, Lorenzo, talking about – I asked him about the – you know, we got 11 degrees here. You're going to get to Florida, and it's going to be 78 degrees at game time. Right?
Thank you.
I mean, but it's good, right?
It's great.
Tasker said it feels great when you get up.
I won't be hurting when I wake up.
Everything
I'll be
feels looser
up.
Before
yeah,
you even get
up,
there.
Yeah, just lubed up, all ready to go. I'm so happy we're playing in Miami instead of 8-degree weather. I mean, I'll just be able to play fast, run around, and not have to worry about trying to stay warm.
All right. Good luck to you.
Good luck,
I appreciate it. Yeah, it should be fun.
Happy
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, hopefully we get you in here next week talking about a playoff game.
Yeah, we should be in here. Yeah, I'll be around here anyway, regardless of what happens. We're going to stay in Buffalo year-round this year.
Are you really?
Oh,
yeah,
wow,
we'll be
okay.
here. So you'll see a lot of my face. Hopefully
I always wonder about that with the guys that got kids, you know, pulling kids out of school mid-year to maybe go back home wherever
that's
home
what we
is.
Typically
and that's
do.
That's the thing that's tough.
But she really loves her class and school and community, and it's smart of us to let her stay here.
And you'll be used to the cold weather by March.
I don't think you ever get used to this
cold. I think there's a couple
cold.
Of vacations.
You get used to this?
There'll be a couple of February vacations.
Right. I'm used to it,
No, you're not.
I don't
you
like
put
it.
You put a big coat on?
Yeah.
Then you're not used to it then. If you put a big coat on.
I put a huge coat on.
Yeah.
I got about four of them. Thanks, Lorenzo. We appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Good luck on Sunday. Lorenzo Alexander with the lowdown every Friday here on the show. Chris Brown and I come back in a moment. Coffee with the Coach coming up. It is the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Chris Brown in for the vacationing Donald Jones. I think we made that pretty clear last segment with Lorenzo that Donald is on vacation. I think we backed the bus over him a couple of times. I would like to say that next week when Lorenzo's here, he will let that slide, but I fear that I know he won't. It's out there now.
He'll bury him. And Donald knows it.
Yes, he does.
Nobody has to tell him.
By Donald sending that picture in, he's basically inviting a critique from Lorenzo Alexander next week.
Oh,
he'll
no
get it.
Question.
He'll get it. We spent a lot of time, a considerable time with Lorenzo a second ago, talking about, I think it was about leadership, right? About the players in the gray area, about my question about vocal leadership. And I'm reluctant to do that today, Chris, and I'm glad we did, but I was reluctant to do it because this season's not over. I'm not in the business today.
You kept qualifying all of our leadership questions with that. This is not a postmortem.
It's not a postmortem. There's a live season that still has at least 2 more days to go. And I know there's, you know, a lot of people out there, as I think I said at the top of the show, McDermott's getting questions today about, but what if you underachieve next year, if you make the playoffs and underachieve? And I'm thinking, let's make the playoffs first before you worry about underachieving next year.
I don't understand the projecting type question sometimes.
I mean, he's getting
nobody
criticized.
Wants to live in the moment anymore.
I want to live in the moment. I want to enjoy the moment. Right. I love having a high-stakes game, really high-stakes game, with some, you know, other games out there. I love having a game in the last season of the year like this. You know, it's special. People should cherish it. We should embrace this.
The Friday injury report is out. Should we mention that really quick? So Sharice Wright is out, still in the concussion protocol, and questionable in a game-time decision will be Deontay Thompson. He had that shoulder injury in practice on Thursday, came out early, and I don't believe he practiced today. Ryan Groy also questionable with that illness. I think he's got the flu or something. Mm. So we'll see what happens there. Everybody else was not listed on the injury report. So Kelvin Benjamin, who practiced Thursday and Friday, is not on the injury report. Like, he's not – I mean, he's on the injury report, but he doesn't have a status designation, which means he's good to go. He's going to play. Same thing for Deion Dawkins, who had an excused absence today, not injury at all. And E.J. Gaines is good to go, as Coach had hinted at after practice yesterday. So all good news with regard to availability for some of the guys who were question marks early in the week.
So Sharice Wright is out, and Thompson is questionable. The Dolphins injury report, when that comes out, is going to be interesting, right? With Laremy Tunsil maybe being
right, yeah. There. Did not practice again today, according to some Dolphins reporters. The other interesting thing is there were some other name players who were not seen during the media viewing portion of practice down there in Miami, like Ndamukong Suh was one of them. The safety,
Michael Thomas
was not, but he's been dealing with an injury. So he has a situation there. And there were a couple other players that you would expect to start for the Dolphins that were not seen at practice. Maybe they came out later, maybe they didn't. We'll find out probably in the next hour or so.
You don't think that they're going to sit some of these guys?
I don't want to believe they will, but when those guys were not – when Sue was not seen at practice today during the media viewing portion down there in Miami, the Twitter buzz was going. Like, is Gase going to sit a couple of guys with nothing to play for this week? I'd be surprised if that happened, but I guess you can't rule anything out.
You would take it if it happened, too.
Well, 100%. I'm sure Vlad Dukas would take it, too.
That's right, and run with it. Hey, Chris had a chance to spend some time with the head coach of the Bills, Sean McDermott, earlier this week. Let's listen in. It's time for this week's installment of Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons Cafe and Bake Shop.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons. I'm Chris Brown, along with Bills head coach Sean McDermott, as the Bills get set for a must-win situation against the Dolphins in Miami on Sunday. Coach, thanks for being with us. So you know the situation. It's come down to this week's game, a team you played just a couple of weeks ago. In general, how do coaching staffs approach games against division opponents in such close proximity? Change more? Change less? Does it affect anything? I mean,
yeah, find the sweet spot, I think, is the biggest thing we want to do. We did some things well. They did some things well. Mm-hmm. Make sure we improve on what we didn't do well. And that goes back to last week also in our game against New England. So, you know, just continue to build, really. Excited about this opportunity, excited for our city, for us to be in our first year and have this opportunity. Hasn't happened in quite some time here, so I'm fired up for it.
I know you talked to the media a little bit about finding more points out there through the course of games of late, particularly in the second half. Points mm-hmm. have been hard to come by. Is there a common thread there that you've been able to uncover to kind of find the key to the solution there?
Well, it's a number of things. Number one is do our job better, each and every one of us. That starts with me and then goes into making sure our communication, our adjustments subsequently are on target with what we've got to do in the second half, what worked in the first half, so on and so forth.
finally, your players and you, I'm sure, all realize that you need a little help along with your victory to get into the postseason. You know it's human nature, Coach, curiosity. What's your plan this week for kind of keeping everybody focused on the task at hand on Sunday and not peeking up at that scoreboard maybe when their unit isn't out on the field?
Well, I think really it's just the reality of if we don't win, it's not going to matter. If we don't put our best foot forward, all this goes away. So really, we control what we can control, and that's our preparation and that's our focus and being locked in when we go onto that field come Sunday.
All right, Coach, good luck getting a giant win this weekend in Miami.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, that's Bills head coach Sean McDermott. This has been Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons. Thanks for watching. Happy New Year, everybody.
Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons, the official cafe and bake shop of the Buffalo Bills. You've enjoyed that coffee session with the coach, haven't you, all season long?
Well, yeah, I try to ask him some things. I'm not going to lie. There's sometimes at a Wednesday press conference, I'll hold a question and wait to ask it of him in Coffee with the Coach.
Yeah.
Why am I going to give that answer to everybody else?
Yeah.
I'll keep it for myself. If I think it's a poignant question that I've thought about for a little bit, let me get Coach's answer to that, you know, when we're one-on-one in Coffee with the Coach. And that, we hope to bring some unique responses out of Coach in that segment.
I do the same. We do a radio interview that airs just before kickoff on Sundays, about 20 minutes before kickoff, and I do the exact same thing. Just save the good stuff.
Yeah.
Right, for yourself.
I'll be selfish. I don't
know. Coffee with
I mean,
coach.
It's not really selfish. You're doing it so the fans can benefit and get a little bit extra insight from him in more of a one-on-one type setting, when sometimes coaches are, you know, more self-effacing or more revealing, because it's just more comfortable. They're not getting that barrage of question after question after question from a group of media members.
We are here at One Bills Drive, where it is football inside the AndPro Sports Training Center, but right outside they're getting set for hockey, the USA and Team Canada in the World Juniors tournament, which with the game today in the outdoors, and folks are starting to file in, and the teams are on the ice warming up as we speak. It's cold. Last I looked, it was 13 degrees in Orchard Park, but they're going to play hockey outdoors today on that rink 10 years after the first Winter Classic, and as I said, the parking lots are filling up. Fans are filing into the stadium trying to figure out what to wear, how to keep warm, and the players are on the ice keeping warm by skating. Going to be pretty fun. 3 o'clock face-off today for the USA versus Canada. Our Twitter poll today, what is your level of optimism for the Buffalo Bills making the playoffs? Of everything working out on Sunday, Bills win at Miami, maybe a Cincinnati upset win at Denver, maybe the other two games go Buffalo's way. What's your level of optimism for the Bills to make the playoffs? That's our Twitter poll. 48% of you say you are cautiously optimistic. I put myself in that camp. That's where I think it is. 42% of you say you are not optimistic at all, which is interesting. And 10% of you say that you are very optimistic about the game. Let us know what you think. Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter as the injury reports begin to come in. And, Chris, the Dolphins injury report is in. Can I read this one to you?
Yeah, fire it up.
Doubtful is quarterback Matt Moore with his foot. Yeah. Number of players, or more doubtfuls. Wait a minute. Laremy Tunsil, doubtful with his ankle injury, and running back Damian Williams doubtful with his shoulder injury. So that's a big one. Laremy Tunsil, their left tackle, listed as doubtful. The word is they would go with Zach Stirrup, an undrafted rookie at left tackle, if Tunsil can't go.
Jerry Hughes.
Questionable. The number of players questionable for this game. Let me find the big names here. Ndamukong Suh, even though he did not practice today, is not on the injury report.
Okay.
All right.
So
I can
must
hear
be
the
an
disappointment
excused
in your
absence
voice.
Or some kind.
Mike Pouncey, who was did not practice Wednesday, full practice today, he is no longer on the injury report. Players listed as questionable include defensive end Cameron Wake, who did not practice today, illness, and he is listed as questionable. That would be a big one. Alteron Werner, cornerback, questionable for the game. Safety Michael Thomas, questionable for the game. Wide receiver Devontae Parker, questionable for the game. Full practice yesterday, limited today. He is listed as questionable for the game. Safety T.J. McDonald, questionable. Linebacker Neville Hewitt, questionable. Pass rusher, defensive end Charles Harris, full practice today, but questionable for the game. And Marquise Gray, the tight end, the wingback sort of, he's listed as questionable as all. So, as you might expect, this deep into the season, the injury report for the Dolphins and the Bills, to a lesser extent, are both pretty extensive. We'll see how, if at all, that plays out going into Sunday. Let's work in a couple of phone calls here at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. John from Hamburg on the line to talk about his level of optimism. John?
Yeah, good afternoon. In general, I'm a huge optimist, you know, especially with the beginning of the season. You know, I see the glass half full. In fact, expected or thought the Bills had a good chance to win 9 or 10 games this year. And I was even in Vegas over the summer and bet that over on the win total, which was 6.5. So that was a pretty easy win. But I have to admit, my optimism was based on the fact that I thought they'd be like a top-10 defense, and they really haven't come close to that. In fact, you know, statistically, the offense and defense rank near the bottom. So, you know, I know the Bills aren't going to give any of those 8 wins back based on that, and I'm not giving my money back based on that either. But when it comes – so I'm a big optimist that when it comes to the organization, the season as a whole. But on an individual game, an individual play level – I'm a real pessimist. I'm like, the glass is half empty and it's leaking. Like with the Miami game 2 weeks ago, when they had that onside kick, I just knew the Dolphins were going to recover it. So for Sunday, and this comes from a long-suffering fan who suffered wide right, no goal, and no touchdown last week, I see this scenario playing out. The Bills win, and the Baltimore L.A. and Tennessee all win. The Bills get edged out. But even worse, and I can see this one coming from a long-suffering fan, the Bills lose, and all three of those teams lose as well, just to put a sour note going into the offseason. But I'll say this. When the season started, I said I'd be happy if the last game of the season meant something. It does mean something. It's a great step forward, and I'll remain optimistic as a whole, but pessimistic for tomorrow or for Sunday. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thanks, John. I'm having trouble sorting through that optimism, pessimism thing. Here is Gary on a cell phone. Hi, Gary. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Hey, John. How y'all doing?
Good. We're doing great here. Thanks, good. Gary.
Yeah, I never got to actually get on the line with Chris in there before. I just want to say I really appreciate your insight.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that.
Bill.com. I really enjoy it.
Thanks.
I like to talk about the Chargers game, if y'all don't mind.
Sure.
Talking about because Peterman's in there. Yes, he did throw the 5 interceptions. I don't think that mattered. I mean, it mattered, obviously. But, I mean, as bad as the defense played, they were going up and down that field. I don't think it mattered as – it wouldn't have mattered if they had Tyrod in as much as everyone's saying. And the national media just keeps killing that. And I know if Tyrod would have been there, we wouldn't have had 5 interceptions, obviously. But I'm not saying it wouldn't have been a blowout like it was. I believe that would have been regardless of who's starting that quarterback. I just want to say that.
Yeah. I mean, who knows how it plays out. You know what game bothers me more than the Chargers game, Chris and Gary? The Saints game. The Saints game was an absolute blowout, and it was played head up. You know, there were no mitigating circumstances like a quarterback's first game. In fact, I was thinking last night, I don't confess all the football thinking I do during the course of a week. I don't think very often about who's going to be in the Super Bowl from the NFC. You know who's going to be in the Super Bowl from the NFC? The New Orleans Saints, Chris. They steamrolled the Bills here in Buffalo. They've done it to a couple of teams this year. New Orleans Saints are the – I know the Eagles and their situation now with the quarterback. The Saints are going to make their way to the Super Bowl this year. I'm ready to guarantee it.
Well, they became a complete team in one offseason. They always had the offense, and they haven't been able to fix the defense. And finally – all the draft choices they made, 14 of their last 21 draft choices were on the defensive side of the ball. That all finally paid off for them this season. That defense finally reached critical mass and became a playmaking defense. That and the addition of Alvin Kamara in the offensive backfield for them were the two primary difference makers in making them a complete football team. They weren't just Drew Brees throwing the ball down the field. They needed a complementary weapon in the backfield to pair with the between the tackles runner Mark Ingram. They got that in Kamara, and then the defense just completely gelled. Marshawn Lattimore had a magnificent rookie season, much the same way that Tre'Davious White had here in Buffalo. And when you've got Brees to pair with all of that, you really become a tough out, and they will be a tough out in the NFC.
Interesting stuff coming out of Miami this afternoon, Chris. So we talked about, first of all, the injury report. You saw that Matt Moore was doubtful. Jay Cutler expected to play. But our buddy Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald writes this, and he just posted it 1 minute ago. Salguero writes, I've been told by club sources that, A, they know they need a quarterback, and the Dolphins are about to undergo a serious study, and that study could start this Sunday against the Bills. According to Armando Salguero, I'll just read this. That's when Coach Adam Gase might give backup David Fales some playing time. Fales has only thrown 5 passes in the NFL. in Chicago, 2015 season, when Case was the Bears offensive coordinator. Not talking about starting him, I don't think, but he's talking about giving David Fales some playing time. This is going to bear watching over the next 48 hours.
Yeah.
The Dolphins' approach to this game.
That's interesting. Maybe they play him if they feel the game is lost. You know, Bills get up 21-0, 21-6 like they did in the last game. Is that when he comes in?
Maybe they just play him so he'll get the second half evaluation time, preseason mode.
You're not going to play him for two throwaway series at the end of the game. You want the game situation for Fales. If you really want to see and evaluate him, get an opportunity to evaluate him, you're playing him in a game situation where the game is still a game. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Where play calling isn't compromised based on the time and score, and he's facing, you know, a legitimate pass rush. The Bills aren't backing off because they're up 15. You know what I mean? I think if they really want to get a true evaluation of Fales in an NFL game, they have to do it before the game is largely decided.
Right, yeah. According to Armando Salguero, who's pretty plugged into the Dolphins, he says Fales got some first-team reps in practice this week with the Miami offense. He says Adam Gase wants the option of playing Fales because he doesn't want to end the season without having a solid evaluation of what Fales can do in a regular season game. He wants to come out of this game against Buffalo knowing whether Fales is a worthy option as a backup quarterback.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
This is news.
This is news. Breaking news. Real news.
This is real news.
Here
yes.
on the show. We're going to take a break. We're back in a moment. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. Coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater. The preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Busy show today. A lot of interaction with fans and a lot of guests, including Kadre Ismail, who covers the Baltimore Ravens. He's part of the Ravens radio broadcast team. Ravens have that big, meaningful game against the Cincinnati Bengals, and Kadre Ismail was asked about the recent resurgence by the Ravens and what's been driving that.
The fact that Joe Flacco missed the majority of the preseason, for the most part, went into the regular season without much work and was still dealing with his back, and you just saw the way it affected their play. You look at the way Alex Collins has been able to gel with his offensive line, who, you know, they kind of went through their carousel of changes. But for the most part, the ability to have Alex Collins out there being that explosive running back and then Joe Flacco being healthy, I think that really has been the big change for this offense and this Ravens ball club.
Kadre Ismail from the Baltimore Ravens radio network. Also on the show today, we had Greg Cosell, the executive producer and analyst for ESPN's NFL matchup. We asked him about Jay Cutler. How do you figure this guy? He looks like the prototypical arm talent quarterback, but he just doesn't get wins. Here's what Greg Cosell had to say about Jay Cutler.
I've always had, I guess, a bias toward arm talent. And so Jay Cutler was a guy I always liked. And, you know, finally a couple of years ago, I just realized that, yes, he has tremendous arm talent, but there's just not a whole lot of timing, rhythm to his game. He misses too many things. And, you know, after a while, I think with Jay Cutler, he sort of evolved into what he is. I mean, he's a very inconsistent player, capable of a great throw at any given time, but he's just too erratic a player.
Greg Cosell on Jay Cutler and the Bills approaching this game against the Dolphins. We wanted to take the temperature of where Bills fans are about this game, so we talked about it on the telephone with you. We also had a Twitter poll. What is your level of optimism for the Bills coming out in a playoff berth coming up next Sunday night? What is your level of optimism for the Bills making the playoffs, knowing everything that has to happen? On Twitter, 47% of you said you were cautiously optimistic. That's where I am. 43% of you said you were not optimistic at all, given everything that's got to happen. 10% of you said you are very optimistic about the Bills making the postseason. Chris, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of subplots developing, even as we got through the show today with the Dolphins having some injury issues, word that David Fales may get some snaps at quarterback, speculation about just Kyle Williams' last game. Could this be Tyrod Taylor's last game? Those are subplots. The main plot is right in front of us, a chance to clinch a playoff spot.
Right, and you hope that this whole process that Sean McDermott has talked about benefits this team and the consistency with which they play on Sunday. The whole premise behind this process of doing everything the right way and trying to get better every week with that growth mindset that he talks about, hopefully all of that can serve these players on Sunday, where, as we were talking with Lorenzo, they don't grip when a bad play happens, or they don't choke up and tense up and don't play their best because they're worried about giving up another big play or something to that effect. Hopefully they play their best, let it all hang out, and get a win and finish on a good note.
All right. As we said, a lot of stuff going on around the Bills. It will be all weekend long, and BuffaloBills.com with Chris Brown will be your place to go for that. We're back on the show next Tuesday. New Year's Day off, but we're here Tuesday. Donald will return with that. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Want to thank our great crew, George Bless, Jeff Koltenick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rood, Olivia Merrill, our producer, Jay Harris. We're back tomorrow, or back Tuesday at 12 noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.